North South Connection. What is going on, all you cool cats and kittens? Welcome to another episode of the Roots of the Aggressive podcast. I hope you like that timely reference. Since we are approaching the, must be the 10-year anniversary of Tiger King, if my sense of time is correct. But without any further ado, we'll hop right into it. I will bring on my guest, who you can find on a multitude of podcasts, both here on the North South feed and as well as her own podcast feed, and on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed. She has a shitload of podcasts, and that is Miss Jennifer Smith. What's up, Jen?
You can't be cracking jokes in the intro if you don't want me to laugh.
No, it makes me feel better about myself. If you laugh.
You're going to have a fun night then. These fucking shows are ridiculous, Jake. But I am glad to be here, and one of these shows is like a big deal, so I kind of feel kind of bad for your listeners, like they're stuck with me on this kind of big show. So I don't know, I'll do the best I can.
The good old self-burial to start yourself off on the show. I remember
expectations.
you've been on I think once before, and I think one of the major through lines, it was a while back, but I think one of your major takeaways from this was you obviously do a lot of wrestling podcasts that are in a similar sort of chronological style. Of course, we do PTB NXT over on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed. You do TNA Never Dies. You do ECW. I'm blanking on the Extreme Three-Way Dance. So you do this. And I remember your takeaway from this is that basically, like, you know, you're used to watching a lot of stuff that, by your own account, a lot of crap at times. And so you were, I remember, taken aback at the quality of these shows at certain points.
Quite a bit. And it still holds through. So more so in the entertainment more than the actual wrestling. But, you know, that's fine. That's up my alley as well. So,
of course. And we are, like you mentioned, this is, it seems like I say this every week now, but it's like, these are pretty big shows, but I think they're just at a point where it seems like every week there's at least one pretty memorable thing happening, which is kind of fun. This is a pretty hot stretch, so I'm glad we can have you on, because like you said, even if maybe, I don't know if I have any classic wrestling on these, but definitely some good moments, so we'll go into it, because it's a lot to talk about. But we will start, as always, with the news and notes. And so our first one is quite lengthy. So, Jen, you hop in anytime you would like to chime in on this little saga I'm about to go through. It has nothing to do with WWE, but it is seems like historic. I'm not super familiar with it, but I think it is an infamous story in wrestling. And one of the sickest and strangest stories in indie wrestling history, former XPW star Messiah was attacked in his home by men who cut off his thumb and also attempted to cut off his penis. Police are now investigating under the belief that the attack was connected to the wrestling business. Messiah described two large black men coming into his unlocked apartment while he was playing video games. These are not my words, by the way. He initially believed they were there to see his roommate, but instead they locked the door behind him and began attacking him. One of them held Messiah down while the other one severed his thumb with garden shears. The thumb was never recovered. They attempted to then cut off his other thumb and his penis while he screamed for help. During the brawl, he was also hit with a chair and a fishbowl because they were trying to knock him unconscious. Neighbors heard screams and called the police, and the attackers fled the scene. Police have a description of the vehicle and sketches of the two men based on Messiah's description, but that's it. Following the attack, Messiah was treated at the hospital and then checked himself out and is said to be in hiding, and is hiding out in another state in fear of another attack on his penis, I'm assuming. So I'll get more into, there's a second part of this where Meltzer kind of gets into what maybe could be the possible motive behind this and who may be the culprits. Mm-hmm. But any thoughts on this? I guess if you get your thumb cut off, would that be a thumbing?
A de-thumbing?
A thumbing, I guess would be.
Well, I mean, that's a very personal and targeted attack. So obviously this guy's gotten himself into some deep shit, and some thugs were sent after him, obviously, right?
Yeah, it sounds very movie-esque.
Very cinematic.
Yeah, what came to mind for me, and I think we discussed this before the show, is that it reminds me of Danny McBride in Pineapple Express when they come in and whip his ass and leave him by the toilet. I think, isn't he handcuffed? They just find him later and he's by the toilet. And you kind of think he's dead, but he can't die in that movie. And he's like, listen to Bone Thugs and Harmony. Yes. Yeah, because they just keep hitting him with random shit and the fishbowl sound like exactly from Pineapple Express. Like, I wonder why. And also, does that really work in real life? I mean, I guess it would knock you out. But, in movies, you just get hit with an object and you just drop to the ground. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it would really work like that in real life. But
well, this guy was a wrestler, right?
Yeah. So,
it takes more than a fishbowl to knock his ass out. And maybe they just didn't come strong enough, and then they just had to start grabbing stuff once they couldn't cut his dick off,
It definitely seems to, they weren't trying to kill him necessarily. Right. Was it, if they
it
were
was
just trying
emasculating, to, attack. It's deeply personal. I feel like a woman put a hit out of him. I'm just going to say it.
Yeah, because, thumb, too, that sucks because you kind of need those.
Yep.
But I'll get into, so Meltzer then goes into possibly the backstory of this. He says, Messiah was recently fired from Rob Black's XPW, which I'm not an expert on XPW, but my, I want to say it's almost like, if you can believe this, like a Great Value TNA at this point in time, where they're almost like even of a lower tier promotion than TNA, but kind of in that same, kind of like all these things that were sort of in the wake of WCW, I feel like. Okay. But I'm not sure. I could be completely wrong. But anyway, allegedly because Black found out Messiah was sleeping with his wife, XPW valet and porn star Lizzie Borden. After leaving XPW, Messiah had become a big star for CZW. The Lizzie Borden rumor was pretty much confirmed at another indie show this week that featured a lot of XPW names. During the show, New Jack cut a promo saying it happened, and when Messiah came out, the crowd chanted, "You fucked Lizzie," to which Messiah got on the mic and responded, and she fucking loved it. Oh. No one is outright saying so because it's dangerous to make accusations without proof to back them up, but the clear implication is that this attack on Messiah was in retaliation was retaliation from Rob Black. XPW acknowledged this incident on its website, basically saying no matter what happened in the past, this is a tragedy, and sending thoughts and prayers to Messiah. I like that they clarified, basically, no matter what happened in the past, whether he deserved it or not, you know, we're not, we'd rather him not be dethumbed. Needless to say, not a lot of people are buying it. I don't think, and then I don't think this was ever solved, and it
is
was
he still in hiding? I mean, is he currently?
I'm not sure, because I guess I should have looked. I guess I didn't want to spend like half an hour on this, but I guess because this is from the observers at the time, so I don't know eventually where this went. Who knows? Maybe I'll be covering the saga on the next.
I was
like,
gonna say,
episodes.
Hopefully you will. Maybe it'll be ongoing.
So maybe people will listen to just for this, and they're like, "Yeah, I don't give a shit about Raw and SmackDown. I just want to know about that guy. Almost get his dick chopped off of Garden Shears." But yeah, it ended up on America's Most Wanted, and I think this might end up on the new. I think I saw something that this might be on the new run of Dark Side of the Ring. So.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so a little teaser.
Can't wait for the reenactment on that one.
The fishbowl.
The fishbowl is gonna be great.
I'm a die now, probably. but carrying on past the saga of Messiah, we'll see if it continues next week. WWE announced plans last week to start WWE Films and expand into non-wrestling programming. Ever since the company went public, there's been talk of opening an office in Hollywood and doing movies and TV shows. What a pipe dream that is. Wonder if that'll ever turn into anything.
Sounds like fake news.
According to a Charlotte newspaper, Ric Flair is once again considering running for governor of North Carolina as a member of the Republican Party. So, slick Rick.
Trying Do to get you feel like the Republicans would have Ric Flair as a candidate?
Yeah, I don't know. I was kind of surprised that he would. I guess it's a different time, though. But
yeah, but still, I don't know. Just because he's a rich white dude, I guess. That's the only demographic that matters. But I don't think Ric Flair would ever make it through any kind of campaign because, I mean, you know, the footage is outrageous.
Like, yeah, I think that's actually...
Being a person, so...
Yeah, I think Meltzer actually makes a note that that's maybe why he decided to not really push it too hard, because he knew all of his dirty laundry would get aired. And...
Right, yeah, you don't need that. You already got enough of that shit in your life.
Sure,
it's not worth it for politics. Fuck all that shit.
Yeah. All right. Bret Hart was discharged from the hospital after spending more than 5 weeks there following a stroke. He's doing 5 days per week of physical therapy and has made impressive progress. So good for Bret. This is a little scary, but thankfully it did not actually happen. Don West's time on commentary may be limited since a lot of people don't like his work in TNA, and there's talk of bringing in former WCW announcer Mark Madden. So thank God for both of us, Jenny, that Don West stuck around.
Bless his little heart.
The king of the hard sell. Jeff Hardy has taken time off from house shows because he's working on an album with his rock band Parox. I never know how to say this. Parox Y question mark Jen. That's G. Not like your name, Jenny. So I just want to imagine him asking Vince for this, like walking up, look, Vince, I need some time off to work on my band, Parox Y Jen. And Vince is like, sure, pal. So continuing on, we have one last one. The Pile Driver roller coaster ride at WWE's Niagara Falls, which is mentioned, we mentioned this a few weeks ago. Niagara Falls location was shut down by safety officials just hours after its grand opening because they didn't have the proper permits and hadn't undergone safety inspections. They shut the ride off on TV the day before during a big ceremony with Val Venus, Trish Stratus, and Chris Benoit. Yikes. And apparently the safety inspector saw the segment on TV and realized it hadn't been approved and shut it down. There's no timetable on when it will reopen. So... not a good start for the Pile Driver roller coaster at WWE Niagara Falls.
Oh my God, that is awful. That is horrific. For the best. Probably saved a lot of lives, that guy, you know?
God, can you just imagine the Pile Driver? It makes some good headlines. Dozens dethumbed on the Pile Driver roller coaster at WWE's Niagara Falls. Yeah, I didn't know this existed until I ran across it. I think it was like a month ago when I was doing these. I'd never known that WWE ever had any kind of amusement park type facility.
I did not know that either.
Yeah.
It makes sense, though. I mean, I would probably go if they were properly inspected and, you know, permitted, of course.
wasn't a death trap.
Right.
I like that the crew that they have out there to try and promote this is pretty funny, too, because none of these people are particularly, like, people you would think is, like, super great on the mic. I mean, Val Venus is okay, but he's usually doing, like, his porn star character. Like,
I don't get kids on the roller coasters, goddammit. Val Venus and who else? Trish?
I'll show you my pal driver. Anyway, but that wraps up the notes.
Shows for up in a towel.
Exposes himself. Maybe that's
who wants to ride not. This?
True pile driver. But yeah, quite a strange week as far as the notes go. So, but I'm glad you get to be on for Saga Messiah with his nearly deschancing.
I need an update on him. I'm worried about him now.
All right. So we know what Jenny's going to be doing after, mm-hmm. maybe even during the recording. Just could Googling.
Be doing that.
All right. So we'll hop into the shows. We start with the August 5th, 2002 Raw. We are live from Baltimore. And we get a lengthy recap of the HBK whodunit from last week, where HBK was thrown into a car window and bloodied and taken off to the hospital. And they offhandedly, which is really random, they just kind of offhandedly mention also that the Hardys are going to be teaming again, which seems mm-hmm. like something they make a bigger deal out of, but it's just sort of an after, like, oh yeah, and the Hardys are going to be back together. It's like, wait, what? Like, this is, seems like a big deal. So any thoughts since this is going to be a heavy focus of this episode? What were your initial thoughts on being intro to this whole HBK getting thrown to the car window, who did it mystery?
Well, I mean, I felt like I was going to be watching a 90-minute episode of Triple H trying to figure out who did it when, in fact, he did it. But that was just my initial thought. I don't know if that'll turn out to be true or not, but, it was okay. I mean, it was... I don't know. I mean, what do you want to say? Like, they're obviously bad actors, and, you know, it's like, they did the best they could. I like Jericho in the beginning, but Triple H is Triple H.
Yeah. You didn't think Big Show was going to do it? Did they try? Yeah, I didn't think so either. So we'll see how this plays out through the show. Like you said, Jericho comes out to address why he jumped from SmackDown to Raw. He says he's the biggest star in the entire company. And that Eric Bischoff is a genius, unlike all the crowd who are a bunch of morons. Mm-hmm. He's a star. Not like that has been Ric Flair, who he screwed over last week. He then gets interrupted by Triple H's music, and he wants to know who attacked Shawn, because he's going to get to the bottom of this, and that Jericho has always hated Shawn, so he is a possible suspect, and accuses Jericho, who then denies it and says Triple H just pedigreed him and has attacked people in parking lots before, so maybe it was him, you cerebral ass, which is a great line. Jericho's, like you said, is really awesome in this.
He's like in his sparkly red pajamas and his crazy weird facial hair and long braid. I mean, like, this whole thing is a whole attitude right here he's got going on. But he was funny as hell during this.
Yeah, and so Triple H fires back at him saying that he was in the ring when it happened, so how could it possibly have been him? And Triple H then says he actually believes Jericho because he knows that Jericho does not have the balls to do something like that. The highlight of this for me was Cerebral Ass. That got me pretty good. I loved him calling him a Cerebral Ass. So we already see Triple H trying to accuse others of doing this because he's trying to find the true assailant. And so Triple H kind of bails out after this because he's, again, has to go question other people. Jericho stays in the ring. He tries to continue after Triple H leaves, but is again interrupted by RVD, and he throws an awesome Jericho tantrum.
Yes.
And then RVD comes in the ring and he says, well, what do you have to, he's like, why would you even come interrupt? You never have anything to say anyway, dude. So he's mocking RVD's stoner persona. And RVD says he just wants to welcome him, and says that he is best when that RVD is the best and what has Jericho been smoking, which gets a good pop from the crowd. And he says, why don't they go at it tonight? And then after kind of some stalling, Jericho says, you got it, Junior. And they kind of set up the battle of the initials, which is how it's played on commentary, Y2J versus RVD. And for his troubles, RVD unloads on Jericho. And but Jericho gets a kick in, is able to escape, and that kind of ends the segment. So would you like to elaborate on how great Jericho was here?
Yes, I would. So when he throws that fit, that was hilarious. And he just looks so annoyed. And then RVD kind of, you know, he's not quite a Jericho, but he played off him pretty well. Like he did all right. He's not the best talker, but he was, you know, a pretty good douche. And then I really loved the chant off. So the crowd got really into that. Definitely more on the RVD side than the Y2J side, but I don't know why. I mean, come on, Jericho's awesome. What's up with this crowd?
Yeah, I guess he's the whiny. He also beat up Ric Flair, I guess, so they're pissed off at him about that. Yeah, but yeah, I thought he did a good job of making RVD look good by making him contrast, because RVD is kind of the stone guy, a few words, where Jericho is just rambling on and on. I just love all Jericho's lines in here. Like, he really gets him with the cerebral ass, and then calling RVD is like, you never have anything good, anything to say anyway, dude. And calling him Junior. I always love when he calls people Junior. He was on. And I'm glad he got to open it and like kind of kick off his swing to Raw, because I think Raw's a good show for him, because he can come out and do these like 20-minute interviews where he gets to act like a lunatic. So I enjoyed it.
Do you like it when the shows open up with something like this, or like with a match?
It depends on if the thing that opens it is good. So it's definitely a Raw thing. They do it sometimes on SmackDown, but it's surely a Raw thing. And I generally am not a huge fan of it. Mm-hmm. It's usually for me at best, it's like okay to good. Like, it's never great for me, because it generally drags on. I thought this one was decently good because Jericho kind of carried it. I thought he was really entertaining in this, and that kind of kept me hooked in. But I don't know if it needs, like, my general thought on him is that they always run a little bit too long for me.
Yeah, like their little tussle, you know, after all of the extremely genius wordplay by Jericho. You know, they fight a little bit, but it's kind of not needed. Like, you could have just not done that. You know, it ran a little bit long.
Yeah, that's usually, that's sort of their thing, is to run long. So so after that, so it kind of sets us up for Jericho RVD later in the show. So now we will get our first match of the night, which is going to be my absolute favorite, Bubba Ray Dudley, and who will be taking on Big Show in a tables match, which, of course, they've been going back and forth for a couple weeks at this point. Kind of, as we've mentioned on the podcast before, they are both sort of in this maybe that the office is not super happy with them, because they, like, JR will frequently make comments about, definitely Bubba, he's made comments about pretty much calling Bubba fat at times, saying that like when they're in Philly, he's been eating Philly cheesesteaks while they've been here and stuff, like making subtle comments that he's not in the best shape. But
well, I mean, you know,
yeah,
he's being honest. I mean, he looks like shit.
Yeah, Big Show's been, you know, even though Show's weird because he doesn't look physically great, but I feel like he's been okay in these matches. Like, in this match, he's okay enough. So yeah, this match I thought it was pretty okay for what it was. I didn't like Bubba's dumb stooging. Like, he always does these stupid moves where he's trying to get the crowd to cheer, make them think he's like cool or something, but he just comes off as really lame. And he did here. It's mostly just Big Show tossing him around, and then Big Show goes for a kick. He kind of sets the table up in the corner and goes to kick Bubba through it, which is kind of a weak spot for a giant to be doing, honestly. Like, pick him up and slam him through it. Like, it's almost lazy trying to put someone through a table. I just lean him in the corner and, like, stick your foot at him. But he misses and kicks through the table. Trish then comes in because, you know, she's BFS with Bubba, which is lame. And she comes in to distract Sho. She slaps him. Spike then comes in a football helmet and kind of hits Sho with that. And Bubba is then able to plop Big Sho on the table for kind of a lackluster finish. Not the greatest thing in the world. It was okay, but not something I was dying to see. Probably the most entertaining part for me was Spike coming on the football helmet just because it's absurd. But I want a star and a quarter on this one, Jen.
Yeah, I mean, you said it perfect. It was kind of not great. But when the table breaks, like, Bubba Ray, it's like he folds it in half and hits Sho with it, and it still has the leg poking out. And hit Sho right in the face with the fucking table. So I thought that was pretty awesome. So it gets a star in 3/4 for me. But yeah, that end was kind of shit. I don't like to see Bubba Ray win a match. I like to see him get beat up by Sho, but don't win.
Yeah, unfortunately, he wins a lot. So yeah, it's kind of a bummer. And then he gets Trish for some reason feels the need to put herself in danger by going after Big Sho, who could just like destroy her to save Bubba, which is, I don't know. Why would they like him? He's not likable. But
I have no idea.
All right. So we'll move past Bubba and we will head backstage where Terry is with the Un-Americans, interview them, but she also gets her opinion, telling the Un-Americans that what they did to take her was deplorable. I thought the use of deplorable was kind of funny. But Lance Storm then says that they are 60 miles from a president who couldn't defend his own country and shares a hometown with The Undertaker. So it's a lot of them going in on The Undertaker, who they attacked last week. And he says Undertaker can't get revenge. The president, then he calls out the president, saying the president can slaughter civilians, but Taker has been humbled. I thought Storm was really good here. His promos have been pretty high. Pretty edgy stuff, too, considering the time frame that we're, basically about a year out from 9/11. And he's kind of, I feel like this was a time frame when you couldn't really, it was very rare for anyone to say anything bad about the president or about the country. Mm-hmm. And so for them to come out doing this anti-American thing, I think hits, you know, gets them a little more heat, and they're like really going for it. They're not saying like generic stuff. They're really going for like specific, pretty brutal comments. So I don't know. I thought Storm was real good here.
So this is my first experience with this Un-Americans gimmick. So it threw me off initially, like, cause he just starts ranting about the president and like, I'm like, okay, piece it together, Jen. And then, so, I'm like, okay, this must be like their gimmick. Like, and then I put it together, like what you said, you know, like, okay, I get it. I see what they're doing. Not sure I really like it. I mean, Storm, he talks like somebody's Facebook page rant, you know, like,
yes.
Like, that's what it sounded like. So, I mean, it's good, you know, in that sense that he sounds like he's supposed to sound in this role, but, you know, kind of rubbed me the wrong way, but. Well done enough, I guess, for the gimmick.
He's an angry Canadian, Jen. Yeah. He's trying to get under your skin. He's trying to be angry.
I don't know if Canadians know how to be angry.
The stereotypical angry Canadian. The un-American. So, but they've got beef with Taker and with the United States, but Sergeant Slaughter is not going to take this. So he waddles up and takes exception to what they're saying about America. And I was having this moment where I was like, man, Sergeant Slaughter is really like feast or famine when it comes to America. He either is like burning the flag or like will defend like the honor of America no matter what, even if he's at a point in his career where physically he shouldn't be doing anything with wrestling. But, you know, it's like he's like either all in or against America. He's like no in between for Sergeant Slaughter when it comes to the United States. He's a man of extremes when it comes to this.
Again, I feel like I'm familiar with that behavior. Yeah. He's not very intimidating, though, in his little WWE black polo shirt. I'm like, if you're going to do this, you probably need to put your gear on. You know, I'm not sure why you're just wearing, like, a fucking stagehands polo shirt.
Yeah, he's he's an agent, but he's riled up. But they kind of set up that he's going to be facing Test later in the night, in a match. So we'll see.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that, aren't we?
Yeah, we'll see what Sarge could bring in the ring. So we'll find out in a little while. So we're setting up. We could see, which is normal for these, that they're kind of setting everything in motion for what's going to happen later on. Mm-hmm. We then go to JR and King, who are giving us a breakdown of last week's brutal attack on Mae Young and Moolah from Eric Bischoff in 3-minute warning. Would you like to chime in, since you weren't on that one, the destruction of Bay and Moolah?
That was awesome.
It's pretty brutal. I just loved it so much.
I mean, come on. You got to respect that shit.
That's what I mean. Great. That's what I said. Like, because you know they're back there being like, look, if we're going to bump, you better make us bump. Like, we don't want to look like.
Yeah.
We're
not weak.
Yeah. They're awesome. Well, Mae Young's awesome. But we kind of see what's going to happen. We'll see. So kind of putting in our heads the 3-minute warning thing. So we'll see if they show up later. But then we now go to a hardcore title match between Tommy Dreamer and Bradshaw. Or at least it was kind of a cool way they started this, because it was a match that was scheduled for tonight, but it was supposed to be later on. So they kind of are first hyping it, but then we see the two are backstage and they sort of just start fighting backstage, which fits the hardcore title. And they kind of start working their way back to the ring. Dreamer gets thrown through some plexiglass, which is a pretty cool spot. Mm-hmm. They finally make their way down to the ring. Bradshaw gets a cowbell and starts choking out Dreamer on the ring post. And they really hit a lot of violent spots in this one. I thought they were really bringing it. Like, they came to really bring the violence in this one, which is not always something you see with these hardcore matches. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a sick neck breaker with the Dreamer gets the cowbell rope.
Yes.
And wraps it around Bradshaw and does like a neck breaker with it. So that was sick. We get the fall-away slam off the top rope. Bradshaw hits it on Dreamer, like the fall-away or the sack of shit slam, as it's sometimes called. And then they get the kendo stick, which Dreamer slams that into Bradshaw's head. You kind of think that that's going to be the end of the match, but it's not. They get to near fall. They head outside, and then Dreamer hits the DDT on the steps for the win. What'd you think of this, Jen? Seemed like it was up your alley.
Hot shit. I liked everything about this match. I loved how it just started all weird in the back. Like, you know, it was very like ECW kind of, but, and then Bradshaw, like, now I'm not used to seeing him either. Like, I'm not very familiar with him as a wrestler, and I'm very familiar with Tommy. So I was like, okay, this is an interesting pairing. Did not expect this little hardcore match on this Raw show. I mean, like, it was good. It was really good. Mm-hmm. I love the random plexiglass. It was just like a sheet of glass, randomly and off in the middle of nowhere doing nothing. I'm like, what is the point of this? And then Tommy goes through it. That was awesome. And he really gets his ass handed to him pretty well by Bradshaw. But then, damn, that DDT on the stairs. That was awesome. I mean, Tommy hit it real sharp. I really loved this match. I gave it 2.75 stars.
Yeah, this was real fun. I went at 2.5 on it, so I'm not far off from you. It was a really good fight. And like I said, it's to your point that you like weren't expecting it, because I would say it's definitely the exception to the rule, because usually these like hardcore matches are honestly pretty boring and they just sort of meander around and kind of do some, like, they always struggle, I find, to convey any kind of violence in these matches. Like, it's supposed to be like hardcore and violent, but like, to your point, it never feels like an ECW, like people beating the shit out of each other. Like, they never get across. It always seems like they kind of just do like trash can lid shots and sort of weak shit like that. Where this one, I thought they did a good job of really making it seem like, man, I feel like these two must have been like, no, we're going to go out there and like really beat the piss out of each other, because they're obviously like two guys that are cool with that. So, and they brought it. I thought it was good. And this is like what I want them, like, this is what I want the hardcore title to be. So I hope we get more of this. And I also like how Dreamer bails through the crowd to kind of sell the 24/7 step that somebody can try and come and steal the title. So he doesn't like go back and up the ramp, and he doesn't even really celebrate. He kind of runs through the crowd to try and avoid anybody coming to steal the title. So, it was real cool. I hope this is more of what we see from the hardcore division. So
Breschtal, just he's so big, man. He just like he, but he gets around. Like he was really impressing me. I was very happy to watch him in this match.
Yeah, I enjoy him in this era. I wish they would. There was a moment when it looked like they were going to do more with him, and then he kind of got put on the back burner. But I think he's doing okay in this role. But yeah, he's fun in this period. I feel like he's kind of underrated and forgotten in this period, probably because they didn't do much with him, and nobody remembers much between this and when he turns into like the heel with the limousine and all that crap. But
This is way more interesting for me, definitely, than any other character.
Yeah, I want them to continue this and have guys come and beat the piss out of each other and with bull ropes and stuff. I'm down for it.
Yeah.
But who is not down for it is William Regal and his buddy Chris Nowinski, or Chris Harvard, as they're starting to call him, as they're disgusted at the brutality and the boorishness of this hardcore match. Molly comes up to them, who is their pal, and introduces her pal, Victoria, to the boys. And then Chris Nowinski, being the tactful Harvard man that he is, immediately asks Molly if she's really a virgin. And she gets a little bit taken aback and then says that the answer is yes. Regal's face, he gets a wonderful Regal face at this. Like, it killed me. His face whenever he sees Chris asking that. And Chris then tells Regal that it will not be for long. So apparently Nowinski is going to try and hit it, I guess. Oh, is what he's going for.
Jacob, is this out of nowhere, or had they been building some sort of virgin story?
Unfortunately, yeah, this is really, so the Molly character is like, basically they've kind of built her as a virgin. The two things that they always say about her is that she's like virginal and pure, because the whole thing is she's supposed to be a heel who thinks like Trish and all are like disgusting. And she thinks they should dress more conservatively. But then they've also done this thing where it's like she's a virgin, and they kind of like make jokes about on commentary, unfortunately, which we're about to see.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, very unfortunate thing, is that they make fun of her for having a big ass. So.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty stupid. So.
All right. And, so I'm just trying to make sure that the female wrestler's virginity is, properly explained to me.
Is in fact, yeah.
Yeah, okay. This was very Regal, bad. It was very bad. Except yeah, for it's, Regal,
Yeah, the Regal kind of, that was the highlight, him giving his face. But yeah, them, anything to do with them, with Molly is usually, not that she's not a good character, but just everything that they do surrounding her is usually pretty shitty. So, and this was no exception. All right, so we head somewhere else backstage, and we see Goldust, who is pissed at Mike Myers because he says that he is the one and only Gold member, which I assume this is around the time when that movie came out. And he says that since Mike Myers ripped him off, he's going to rip off Mike Myers. And he brings out his buddy, Little Goldust, who he dubs Mini Dust. Obviously, Mini-Me reference to take you back to the early 2000s. Mini-Me. So... at first, you kind of think like, well, this is them being weird, but it is at least a reference to the movie when Mini Dust humps Booker T's leg. that does happen in the Austin Powers movies. So Booker T then turns to see Triple H. So a really strange turn there where we go from like Mini Dust humping his leg, and now it gets all serious when Triple H walks in. Real odd tone shift there. So Triple H does his normal interrogating people to see who attacks Shawn. Booker T denies it. And Triple H accepts that he doesn't think that Booker T did it, but then he takes out his little buddy, the Sledgehammer, and says that if he's lying, he will be introduced to his little friend. And I was like, oh my God, he's such a dork. This is a real dorky line to compare the Sledgehammer to Mini Dust. It makes me wonder, like, is this the whole, did they really like create Mini Dust just so Triple H could put in that line about the Sledgehammer? I really hope not, but odd segment.
I love how you address the tone shift, because because my note for that was poor Booker T surrounded by these crazy white people, because that's exactly how it feels.
It's true.
Goldust was hilarious. in this, like, he had me cracking up, and I thought Minnie Dust was hilarious. So, you know, why? Triple H is ridiculous. This is crazy.
Yeah,
I'm just like listening to him talk, and I'm just like, mm-hmm. Come on, man.
Yeah, these interrogation things where he's come after these people are not, it's kind of like what people usually criticize about him, that he comes off as too, like, trying to make his voice all, like, gruff and intimidating and stuff, and the sledgehammer and all. But I also love, it's just the latest example with Booker T of, like, he's kind of been palling Goldust for a while now, so just, mm-hmm. he's so used to this, like, no matter how absurd it gets, he can kind of just shake it off, whether it's, like, Minnie does something, is like, he just, like, he's like, man, get off me, and he just can't take about his day, because he's so used to Goldust bullshit. They're really awesome.
I love it, I love it. Long-suffering Booker T. Yeah.
All right, so now we're not going back to the ring yet, because we are now in Eric Bischoff's office, and we see that is Howard Finkel wants to speak mm-hmm. with him, and he tells Eric Bischoff that he's inspired. He wants to challenge Lillian for the job of ring announcer. Eric Bischoff tells him he doesn't care, but then says, sure, whatever, you guys just alternate, and we'll let the fans decide who they want to be ring announcer. Fink then hands him an envelope from SmackDown, which turns out to be from Stephanie. He asks Fink to read it, so he reads it in the Fink voice, and is basically SmackDown promo hyping SmackDown Red in the Howard Finkel voice, which is funny. And then the only other thing I have from this is then, so obviously Bischoff is pissed because it was from Stephanie, yada, yada. But he says this line about, yeah, really peg my bitch meter, which I've never... Is that anything you have ever heard in your life, Jen?
No, but I died. I died because that's hilarious. And I hate Eric and I hate laughing at his jokes, but that shit was funny. Just the way he said it, you know, like, you just pegged my bitch meter. I was like, what the shit?
Never heard that in my life. That's hilarious. Yeah, because I didn't know if it's like it. Like, he's saying, like, he's turned into a bitch, or he's calling her one. It's very
he's
strange.
He's calling Stephanie one. Like, you know, like, he has bitch dar or something like that.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay. Yeah. I guess it's just the yeah. first and only time anyone's ever used that saying. Just so random.
It's the word pegged that throws you off, I think, yeah, probably. And you're just like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, so he's pissed off. Just the continuation of, they like to throw these little Stephanie Eric, the feud continues kind of thing. All right, we then get a Kane return video. Who Kane has been out for quite a while, quite a few months. He's been gone the entire summer, but it looks like he will be back soon. So we'll see the return of Kane soon. And then we head to the match earlier that was hyped between Test and Slaughter. Well, I say match, but it turns out... I didn't even rate this because to me, it didn't even constitute enough of a match here, because they come out. I like JR basically calling Sarge fat, like saying, as like, look, we don't know if Sarge is in game shape for this match, which I thought was funny. Like him pretty much saying, like, oh, look, I know he doesn't look like he should be in the ring, but, you know, he was really fired up about protecting his country. He works backstage, but he couldn't let this shit go down. So we don't know if Sarge is in game shape, but it kind of ended real abruptly. Like I said, it really wasn't much of a match. Like mm-hmm. Tess comes in and gets a few shots in the boot, but it's odd. I thought they would go for more heat here and really have mm-hmm. like, it seems like if you're gonna do this, you have Tess come in and like whip his ass, or have the Un-Americans come and I'll jump him and get a ton of heat on them. But it didn't last long enough to really get enough heat. I don't know. It was very odd. Like, it was weird that they would hype it up earlier just to do this. It's makes me think like something went wrong or something. I don't know. It was real weird. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with that. I didn't rate it either. It just felt like nonsense filler to me. Like, just to get Slaughter out there. I don't know.
Yeah,
like, just to counter like an upside down flag.
Yeah, it seems like we're going to like have old fat Slaughter go out there and the crowd likes him. You know, he's defending the country. Like, you let him get his ass beat down to get more heat on them. And if you're only going to do this for 30 seconds, why even bother?
Maybe he was supposed to, and then he said, fuck this shit, man.
Yeah. Like an audible, like he's like, I'm having palpitations.
Like, maybe he had some chili or something before the show, and just like calling it in the ring, like, oh, I gotta go.
Sorry, America, I have heartburn.
I was just like,
can't defend your honor.
Well, I'm old and fat. Sorry about it.
Well, but anyway, so we kind of leave that abruptly, but we head to our next match, which will be Booker D and Goldust versus Steven Regal and Chris Nowinski / Chris Harvard, which again, they're kind of going both ways with him. It's almost like they want to switch his name to Harvard because they're really pushing that. King says that Booker T didn't go to college like Chris Nowinski did, which to Jr. is like, well, who gives a shit? Like, it doesn't matter. Like, they're wrestlers. But Regal immediately goes after Goldust's shoulder, and Nowinski kind of follows suit. Just a lot of really awesome Regal arm work with this. He does all his various kind of mat-based attack. He does a lot of twists, like flipping around and twisting around Goldust's shoulder, which is good. Chris Nowinski comes in. He does a weird underhook thing that looked a little bit botched. But eventually, it was mostly Regal doing awesome Regal arm work, which was good. We then get the hot tag to Booker T, who comes in like a house of fire like he normally does. And he ends up winning the match with the scissors kick. I thought this was real fun. A lot of high energy. Booker T and Goldust are really great. They're super fluid. Booker T works really well as a high tag because he has so much energy and his kind of repertoire is really fit for it because he has some explosive moves. Regal was really awesome in his role doing his normal Regal, like picking somebody apart, limb work. And Goldust, I thought, was really good selling the shoulder. He even sells it even after the match is over and they've won, which is really good. And I even thought Nowinski was not particularly offensive in this match. He kind of, Regal carried the heavy load for that team, but I thought Nowinski was okay. Probably the best he's looked so far since he's been on Raw. But yeah, I went 2.5. I thought this was a fun little tag match.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. Mm-hmm. You're right about Harvard there being the weak link, but you know, he's kind of lucky he gets to share a ring with these guys, like, because they are on fire in this match. I really loved the Goldust and Regal pairing.
Yep.
Like, I just wanted them to just keep tagging in. Like, I was kind of over Booker even at this point, even though he is a great hot tag. Mm-hmm. And the finish was really great as well. But for me, it's Goldust and Regal in this. And it was so energetic, and the pace was just on point. I just really, really, really ended up liking this match so much. Maybe I just don't watch enough Goldust matches, but, like, I just love him. And, I mean, the chemistry between him and Booker T is amazing as well. Like, they, what you would say, you know, would be like an odd pairing, but they have this real energy in the ring that really comes across. So I gave it 3 stars.
Yeah, it's fun. He's real good in this era. I've really enjoyed Goldust in this time period. It's almost like he's pretty much kind of wrestling like he's dusted, like the Natural, just with the Goldust stuff on. Because he's like past the point of doing all the Goldust like theatrics and all that bullshit. He's kind of just, he wears the Goldust stuff, but he just sort of wrestles like Dustin Rhodes.
He's evolved the character to that point, yes, where he can do this stuff, which is amazing.
Yeah, so he's always really good when he's just, you know, his only weak points are that. So, yeah, he's awesome here. And, yeah, I thought it was really smart of them to put Nowinski with these three guys. Like, take three pros and put this guy in here. Let him come in for a few seconds and look decent and kind of, you know, sort of spoon feed him, I guess. I thought it was smart by them. So, really well done match. Booked Us is, like, one of my favorite things to watch on these Raws. And, of course, we get the Spinneroonie to
Of course. I mean, that was hot. That was really good.
The good Spinneroonie. And then, like I said, Goldust selling the shoulder as he walked out was good. And I always like Goldust, too. He's good at taking a shit kicking because you can always tell because his face paint. He kind of has the sting thing where his face paint starts melting off. So you could tell he got his ass beat, which is good. So, all right. So we continue on with Triple H interrogating Detective Hunter. He confronts the un-Americans about Sean, and they say by the time... I love that they say, like, well, yeah, we were going to assault him, but by the time we got there, he was already destroyed. So I thought that was, like, some good healing by them to be like... And they're so earnest, they're like, no, we really were going to whip his ass, but by the time we got there, somebody had already wrecked him, so we didn't have
a chance. I kind of love that, too. It's a different answer, because everybody else is like, hey, I didn't do it. And then these guys like, well, we were... and then Triple H putting his hammer through the food table is escalating these interrogations quite a bit.
Yes, he's really trying to show everybody who's boss with his hammer. All right, so he'll continue to do this as the night goes on. We'll see where we go next. But before that, we have a match between Trish and Victoria. This will be Victoria's in-ring debut. We saw her last week, I believe, but I don't think she wrestled. We get Molly on commentary because Victoria is her buddy. And this is where things go horribly, horribly wrong with Molly on commentary, because the entire time King is just, it's like to the point of like harassment. Like, it's really like he is badgering this poor woman and she sounds uncomfortable. Like, I just wanted him to die during this entire match. He just constantly asks him, so are you a virgin? Have you ever done this? And I'm just like, can you please shut up? And to the point where I could barely focus on what was going on in the match, because all I could hear is this stupid, annoying. Like, he asked her, like, do you have a fondness for cherries? And I'm like, oh my God, why? The match itself was real basic. There wasn't much to it. It was just to kind of establish Victoria as a heel. Because she kind of pretends like she hurt her knee, like she feigns this knee injury, and then you find out she's faking. I want a star on it. I think Trish does end up winning this. I honestly don't even remember who won. I even think I put it down because all I could think about.
Now, look, I want to tell you about this match that they put together while this fucking numbnuts is over here drooling over Molly's tits, okay? They put together a pretty good little match. I thought that Victoria looked pretty good. And Trish is always fun to watch. The little fake out with the injury was pretty well done. You know, that's kind of advanced, I think. Probably for your debut match, you're already out there like faking injuries. I mean, that's kind of bold move. But the match is good. Like, see, this is where I have trouble rating, because I enjoyed watching it, but everything that King said made me want to claw his eyeballs out, including when he says that he's converted a few virgins. And I was like, oh, come on, King. But I didn't want to ding them for his dumbass shit. So I gave it 2.5 stars. And it is what it is. I thought it was a fun match, and King's an asshole.
Yeah, like I said, it was a fine match. The commentary actively hurts it, because it makes it difficult to even, you know, because it's distracting, which is like the worst thing I think commentary can do. And so, I would...
Victoria actually steals the win, because she hangs on to the ropes and is on top of Trish. So I thought that was interesting as well, because going into this, I would think that she would lose to Trish, but she does a great, pretty well done heel win, like in her first match against somebody like Trish. Like, I thought that was interesting.
Yes, it does. Yeah, you're right. Now that I think about it. Yeah, because it kind of, I thought they did a good job of doing that, of establishing her as a heel, because it is weird. Like, the way she's introduced, they show her as like Molly's buddy, but they don't really show her as a heel like Molly. She's just kind of like their acquaintances or something. So it's cool to see her kind of come out and show that she's a heel. But yeah, I think she could, that's what they need to focus on. This is just another factor in it, because now you have Victoria in the mix. But they need to drop all the stupid Molly shit about her being a virgin and her ass and all this dumbass stuff that ruins it.
Is it because that they don't think that guys would like watch this as a legitimate match unless King was, you know, drooling over somebody's, you know, tits and commentary? And like, I mean, you didn't enjoy it, but like, in this era, are guys supposed to like that? Is that what they're going for?
No, and I think that's the issue here, is I don't think they, because they kind of start the feud off as sort of a tradition. It's a really good feud when they start it because it's like a good contrast of characters. Like Molly thinks that Trish is trashy sort of thing, mm-hmm. and Trish sort of goes against it. But then they pivot to all this other stuff, and it makes it seem like they don't trust them or have any faith in them to have a regular feud. Just feud based on, you know, Molly's a heel, Trish is a face, mm-hmm. you know, let them be their characters. They feel like they have to put in all this kind of
male dominant bullshit.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's been a real problem with the whole thing, because if they would just let them have the feud the way they started it, it would have been really good. But they've convoluted it with all this and kind of made it. And then it's weird because King should be on Molly's side because he's the heel commentator, but then he's like chastising her. So that doesn't make sense either. It's like you said, all of that super, like it, they have to do that rather than do it like anything else. All, like you said, the male stupid shit has to like supersede everything else, because right, we have to have King. Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense. And like at the time, like if dudes are watching this, like, are they just like disgusted or turned off by it as well? Or are they into that? Or do they not care about women's wrestling at all? Like, I'm curious about the audience at this point too.
Yeah, I would probably, unfortunately, expect probably not great things. Like, you know, that they're probably more into it because the crowd does get into it when they do like the Molly has a big ass thing and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. They get into it, and that's sort of what they like about it, where mm-hmm. rather than not liking her because she's talking down to Trish and that sort of thing, which would kind of be where you would hope it would go because it makes more sense. But mm-hmm. yeah, it's not been.
It's pretty woke, is what it is.
Not so much.
In 2002. I mean,
no.
You know, it's fine.
Yeah, it's bad. And they either need to fix it or just drop it and move on to something else. But they jump Trish after the bell, but she kind of fights out of it because she's a good fighting baby face. But yeah, I went, I'd probably go like 2 stars on the match because it was like you said, it was a solid match. It's just, I don't want to hold the commentary over them, but it sucked.
Yeah,
All right. But we'll go to Triple H now, continuing his investigation as he questions the Big Show. Big Show tells him that he didn't do it. And Big Show is still upset. He's like having a very bad day because he's got this going on. He just got put to the table by Bubba. He's still upset about Trish pretending to kiss him earlier to get his attention. I don't think I even mentioned that earlier, but yeah, that's how she distracted him. Was pretending she was going to kiss him. And so, of mm-hmm. course, he goes like catatonic because she's going to kiss him. So, show's having a shitty day. Just Triple H coming after him. Trish didn't kiss him. Just sucks to be him.
Well, it looked like to me Triple H wanted to make out with him because they were very, very close to each other during this promo. Like, all up in each other's like faces, like staring dead into each other's eyes. Like, it was very physical. Intense, ridiculous interrogation with his fucking hammer. The hammer is driving me insane, like bad. Like, I hate it so much.
Yeah, he's got to show me means business.
It's so get in his face.
Yeah, the hammer. Similar. Aaron George feels similar about the hammer too. Yeah, the hammer is.
He's felt a disturbance of the force right now.
Yeah, he's like, the hammer.
The hammer. Great. I mean, like in the ring, that's fine. Like, give me a hammer and fucking whatever you want to do with it, but don't carry the motherfucker around.
Yeah, well, the implication is like, so are we to believe that he's gonna like brain these people with the hammer if he finds us? Like, yeah, even the un-Americans, like, yeah, we were gonna beat him up. And the whole, yeah, it's Triple H is hammer. But anyway, we'll go to the not hyped at all reuniting of the Hardy Boys as they're going to face the un-Americans, which they offhandedly just said at the beginning of the show. So that kind of sucks going this because you would hope that the Hardys getting back together, even though it hasn't been a really long time, you'd hope it have some kind of build to it rather than just being thrown out here. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, they kind of do that at this point. Just to try and, you know, I don't have exciting stuff. But this match, they kind of do some back and forth like you'd expect. They neutralize Christian. The Hardys hit the Twist of Fate and the Swanton, but then Christian pulls the ref out and uses the belt to get the DQ. So it didn't really last very long. Didn't really have enough time for me to really get cooking or anything. It was sort of just almost like they went through maybe what would be the first part of a normal match, and then they went for the DQ sort of thing. Let the Hardys get their spots in. Mm-hmm. But kind of, I would say, a lackluster re-debut for the Hardys. I want a star and a half just because it kind of didn't seem like they were going for a great match or anything in this one. Just kind of going for the DQ and the heat on the Un-Americans.
Yeah, I don't know. This was weird, too. I gave it a 2? just, I don't know. Like you said, I would think the Hardys would have a better re-debut, but nope, guess not. It's fine, I guess. I just wasn't much of a match. Like, why even try to do that?
Yeah, it seems like you'd almost like build it up, like the Hardys come back together to go after the Americans, but like at least build it up for a week or two, like give them some motivation for this. Yeah, it was weird. But it seems like the main point of this is what happens after the match, in that Tess comes out, but then so does Undertaker, and he comes out to clear house. Weird moment. I'm pretty sure he hit Matt Hardy. I think Undertaker hits Matt Hardy for some reason. I don't know if he just like saw a bunch of long haired dudes and grabbed the wrong one, but he definitely hit Matt Hardy.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. I think they tried to like, once they realized he was doing it, they kind of cut the camera, I think, but I'm pretty sure because it was like, I don't think anybody in this match has as dark a hair as Matt Hardy. And he had like the little fishnet shirt on. I was like, he's hitting the wrong guy right here. So that was kind of weird, but he chases the Un-Americans to the back, where conveniently they just have like a car waiting for them. They hop in the car, they take off. Undertaker then finds a police motorcycle, takes the police motorcycle, which has a key in it somehow. He starts the police motorcycle and chases after them. So this was definitely like a what are we doing moment for sure.
Yeah. I don't think you could just steal a cop motorcycle like that, Undertaker.
Just commit a felony here.
Yeah, just right on camera. Just, you know. And, you know, like, who did he think Matt was? Because, I mean, the Un-Americans are bald and blonde. So, like, I don't know. He was not having a good night. Much like Big Show.
Maybe he was still concussed from when they hit him with the concerto from last week. But yeah, and the weird thing too is like,
I saw that clip.
They never follow it up any time. Like, we don't get an update on this later in the show. It's just like,
chases
off. Yeah, he just takes off on the police bike, and we don't know what happened.
I assume he just goes straight to jail. You know.
Yeah. He's arrested. Real goofy. All right, we now get Eric Bischoff, who is out to assess the situation that's going on with the Fink and Lillian. Fink says, unless you mean this killed me.
Y'all.
Fink comes out and says, unless you mean Sailor's doing what they want, he definitely has more experience than Lillian. So I'm implying that Lillian has been, sleeping with a bunch of sailors.
Such a weird Fink, man.
Such an old man joke. Sailors.
Oh, God.
Lillian then comes back at him and says, Howard often has a hard time getting his sail up. And then Fink just comes back and says, he's all man, honey. Eric, of course, is waiting impatiently as this is going on. And he says that, unfortunately, it has gone 3 minutes too long. And so 3-minute warning come out. The Fink, like the nobleman he is, bails out on Lillian, and Lillian is left to eat a sick Samoan drop. She takes a sick bump here.
Yeah.
Samoan drop, and then they hit her with the splash, which is, it was brutal. Like,
they broke her. They broke her in half is what they did. I popped so hard for that shit. Like, I rewound it like 6 times because she was just like, I thought, after I first watched it, I was like, did they sub in like a dummy for Lillian that I missed? So I'm like watching it carefully. I'm like, no, that's Lillian's body. And she just goes limp. Like, she just like boneless and just fucking boom. And then when he slashes her, it's like, I thought that guts were going to come out of her. Like, I respect Lillian so much for those 2 bumps. Like, that was awesome. I love this part.
Yeah, because a lot of time when they're going to do something like a non-wrestle like this, you could kind of see them sort of trying to lay it in soft a little bit. And they definitely did not.
No.
They just slammed her. That's what I was saying last week. With this and then with the May and Moolah stuff, these guys must be like nervous every week because they're like kind of new on the roster. And then every week they're like, all right, you have to go like Samoa and drop Lily. And they're like, oh my God, like I don't want to go out here and like break this woman's back. Yeah, like, and I'm like, but it's pretty dark stuff. Like, that they're coming out every week, and like, they do the full like stretcher thing with Lillian here, just like they did with Moolah and May. And like, they have her like neck secured, like, she could be paralyzed. Like, it's pretty dark stuff. But also, I thought it was sort of weird that they like, they sell the stretcher thing and all, but then on commentary and all, they don't really sell the gravity of it, I find. Like, and the crowd is just like, not really, it's not like the crowd's somber or anything. Like, she has the big neck brace thing, like, she might be paralyzed, and the crowd's just still kind of like humming along, like, oh, no big deal. And on commentary, Joe was like, yeah, this is not good, but you know, like, it's becoming kind of a weird segment in that it's going to be hard for them, I think, to sell it every week, as brutal as it looks, to be able to give it its proper due to make it seem, I guess, like, as big of a deal as it looks when you're assaulting these non-wrestler people and stretching them out and all. I don't know.
Yeah, I would agree with the weak stretcher job, you know, after that bump. Like, I just feel like that was a little bit of a letdown. I would agree with that.
Yeah, and it definitely makes Eric seemed like legitimately an evil person.
Like, oh, he's a fucking asshole. I mean, like, I legit shoot believe he's the devil. So,
so it's kind of, but I guess it works for them because then it really makes him unlikable. That way, nobody can be like ironically into him, I guess, or something. But yeah, it's, I'm interested to see how the 3-minute warning thing plays out. Like, where's it going to go? Because I don't really remember or anything. So, but yeah, they're wrecking some people. But we continue on now. We get our next match with Chris Jericho versus RVD, the bad officials and the chants, like we mentioned at the top of the show. So most of this is, so we have Jericho, he kind of starts out on top, and, pretty good sequence by Jericho on top, kind of working over RVD. RVD comes back. He does his normal kind of RVD-isms, his educated feet and all that kind of sort of stuff. And then the kind of last segment of this, they settle back into just kind of going back and forth until the ref ends up getting bumped. Jericho then ends up going for a chair like he normally does. And before he could do anything with the chair, Flair comes out for revenge with one of his own. And then he kind of neutralizes Jericho, which allows RVD to recover. The ref recovers. RVD hits the 5-star frog splash and wins it. I thought it was an okay match. Like, I know I didn't say a ton, but, you know, they did what you'd expect these guys to do if they're going back and forth. A couple of I thought the RVD, when he sold the German suplex, was super good because he kind of like he was like stuck in it, where he just kind of laid on his head. That was good. I have to mention that Jericho took off the turnbuckle, which is a trope on here that this seems to happen every single week, where some heel's taken off the turnbuckle. Everybody take a shot. The heels are taking off the turnbuckles like they do every week. But I went 2.5 on it, Jenny. I thought it was a fine enough little TV match, but I thought the main point of it was really to build what's going on with Ric Flair and Chris Jericho in their conflict.
That sounds perfectly exactly what I had in my notes. Like, this seems like a typical RVD Jericho match, and they're kind of the same guy, like, wrestling wise, you know. So it's like, it's not fun to watch because I like watching both of them, but it's like mirror images. Like, they're just the same wrestler pretty much until Jericho goes for the chair, which I do enjoy too. So yeah, they had some nice sequences in there, and I enjoy both of them a lot. And I liked the Flair run in, and I liked Flair dancing on the ramp after because he looked ridiculous. 2.5 for me.
Yeah, fun match, and a good way to kind of continue the Flair Jericho stuff while also giving us a pretty solid little TV match. Gives RVD a nice little win, but at the same time protects Jericho. So perfectly fine for TV, I would say. All right, so we now go to our climax of the Triple H Shawn Michaels saga. Eric Bischoff is on the phone. He says he has something for Triple H in the ring. And he says that he has a feed, a satellite feed to San Antonio, so Triple H can talk to Sean. Sean is on the Titantron now as Triple H is in the ring. He looks very rough. He's bandaged up, still has a lot of cuts and bruises from when he got thrown into the window. Triple H compares it to getting into a fight with a family member, talking about his conflict he had with Sean before he got thrown into the window. And it's like you get in a fight with a family member and then something bad happens and you regret it. And Sean says, it's fine. He gets the point. It's no big deal. Eric, in a good dickhead moment, says, the satellite time's not cheap, so let's get to the point here, which I thought was pretty funny for him being this.
Right in the middle of their bro moment.
Yeah, which was funny. All right, Sean then says all he knows is that he got jumped. He didn't see anyone. And Triple H reassures him that whoever did it is a marked man. Sean then tells Triple H that he was able to get the security camera footage, and he shows it. But as we see, it is ridiculously blurry. Like, what would be the point of having a security camera that is this blurry? Like, you could literally count the pixels on this fucking security footage. But so Triple H, you could tell at this point, I think, is starting to look a little bit nervous. It's hard for me to tell if I'm just reading into it because I know what's going to happen. But he maybe looked like he was getting a little nervous. Sean then says, you know, with computers, we can fix this and clean up the video and see it again. And so we zoom in and the picture becomes a higher resolution. And we see Triple H did not wear anything inconspicuous when he did this attack because he has on like the Triple H shirt with the big emblem on it. So you can clearly tell it's him. And it's revealed that it was him. Sean gets extremely serious now. Well, Triple H starts to put on a maniacal smile and starts to brag about it, saying he did it. He said he wanted to prove that Sean is weak and that he needs Triple H because, you know, he hasn't wrestled in years and he's not what he was before. And he is nothing without Triple H now. I did like how much of a psycho Triple H is starting to sound like here. Like he's starting to have like crazy like delusions here that Sean like needs him as like you know, dependent on him and all this stuff, which I thought was good. He then pats himself on the back for not hurting him more, saying he could have, because if anybody else would have done it, they would have crippled him. And so Sean then comes in and says he'll be 100% by SummerSlam. And he says that it will be a challenge, that it's a challenge. Triple H laughs at him at the idea of him being able to wrestle because HBK is dead. The HBK we knew was gone. And he says at SummerSlam, if they wrestle, he would cripple him. He then says that he won't be able to hold his – he then tells Sean that if he fights him at SummerSlam, that he will beat Sean to the point where he'll be crippled, where he won't be able to hold his child anymore. He won't even be able to satisfy his wife anymore. And that he and Sean comes in and basically closes out by saying he knows he's not the man that he once was, and he might not be the showstopper, he might not be the wrestler he was, but he knows for damn sure that he can still fight, and that's what he wants from Triple H. And that's how we end the show on Sean as he closes the promo. All right, so that was a lot. Jen, what did you think of this whole conclusion to this saga here?
Well, I mean, obviously, I called it, so I'm not surprised. And, you know, I thought that with maybe some acting lessons or like, these guys have been wrestlers long enough to like be better at a scene like this, in my opinion. Like, Triple H is what he is, but like, he's a professional guy. Like, I feel like he should be a little bit better than this, because the elements are there to make this like a pretty compelling story, but they just don't really sell it good enough for me. Like, they're just not sort of there. I don't know why. I mean, they should be. Like, I just find it disappointing. Like, this seems like amateur stuff and they're not. So anyway, it's an attempt to be sort of like sophisticated, I guess, but it doesn't really ever get there. And Sean is so like subdued, and he's like, well, maybe I can't fight anymore. or maybe I can't wrestle anymore, but I can still fight. And like, I don't know, that just sounds kind of lame to me. And then Triple H is like, hey, anybody else would have crippled your ass, and you're lucky I didn't do that, but I'm going to come to SummerSlam, and then I'm going to cripple your ass there instead. And like, none of your reasoning makes any sense to me. So I like the idea. I just don't like kind of how they end up pulling it off.
Gotcha. I kind of like Shawn being a little unsure of himself. I think it's a decent like change compared to, you know, the HBK that was, yeah, like that we used to see. It kind of shows that he's in a different place, everything. And I think it fits for the match. It's always a weird, this whole thing is weird to look back on, because at the time, it's like you don't know if this is like Shawn's one match, and it sort of felt like that at the time. Mm-hmm. And obviously it goes on for like another like nearly 10 years after this, and kind of has this whole second part of his career. Like you said, I do. They're both hammy. I think it's Triple H, especially. I mean, I thought Shawn was pretty good here, and it's probably more because I liked that he was subdued. I thought it kind of made sense for him, like being serious. And it was interesting to see him, like I said, do sort of a different character than maybe what he was known for early in his career, like the flamboyant kind of cocky guy. Now he's maybe at a different point in his life, and like almost like he doesn't really want to have to do this, but he has to now because of Triple H. But yeah, they're both kind of hammy, but I thought, to me, I think the story helps push them along, because I think it is really good, especially by wrestling standards of like the motivation for it and given the history between both these guys. Mm-hmm. And then it's just a really big moment for Shawn to basically say he's going to have another match at this point, because you were kind of thinking, I think by this point, a lot of people are like, well, maybe he really is done. He'll never come back. So it was, I think that's a cool thing about this too. And I just like the whole, I do like the story, but like you said, they're both, nobody's winning an Oscar here by any means. Right. And it did go on a little bit too long. I think everything with having to enhance the camera and all, like why even bother with that crap? Like
I did like Shawn sort of tricking him a little bit, you know, like getting this huge like bro moment, and then like, hey, I have you on video, you dumbass. So that was fun.
I guess they were like trying to build the suspense with the blurry camera thing, but it's like, there's enough suspense. You've been pushing this the whole time. Just have them show the real video and get to the point. Definitely not a surprise, like you said, either. You know, you kind of know, but I thought it was still an interesting pivot, because they kind of were already feuding. So it at least was like a little bit of a red herring to kind of twist the story a bit. Mm-hmm. And I like that they sort of set up the stakes in this too, that, like Shawn could really get hurt by getting back into this match, because, you know, maybe he's not ready for it. And Triple H is apparently a psychopath that wants to make sure he can't have sex with his wife anymore or whatever. So kind of sets the stakes up that he's like risking all this in the match. So, yeah, I thought it was okay. And I thought it was pretty good. I enjoyed it, but I also have like, this is a, I kind of have nostalgia for it too. So that could be coming into it. But that is how we close the show, with a very, maybe not a huge mystery, but it does set up where we're going with Shawn and Triple H. But that wraps up Raw. This is a weird one, because I thought we had a decent amount of like filler and maybe kind of junky stuff on here. But I thought the closing angle was pretty good and, you know, historic, with Shawn basically saying that he's going to return. And we did have some good matches on here. The hardcore match was fun. RVD Jericho was fun. Book Dust was fun, even with the crap that we got. So it was definitely a mixed bag. So I went 6 out of 10, a little bit higher than average, just because you had the big angle to close it. And we had probably more good matches than you would maybe get on one of these. What'd you think, Jim?
I agree with everything you just said. 6 out of 10 for me. Like, you know, the cringy stuff was at least fairly short-lived and not too overpowering. And most of the other stuff was really entertaining and fun. So I enjoyed the show.
Yeah. All right. So we will roll on to SmackDown. So this will be the August 8th, 2002 SmackDown. And we are live from Richmond, home of our good, close personal friend, Tim Capel. So I thought it was very fitting that you would be on this one.
I think so, live too.
From Richmond. Yeah. We open with a very sentimental Hulk Hogan package.
Oh, boy.
talk about Hogan being basically, yeah, like his big return and a lot of nostalgia, and then paired with a package about Brock Lesnar, basically showing Brock Lesnar as this vicious beast to sort of hype up their showdown that is going to happen tonight, which I thought was really good. I thought it was a good contrast to show both guys and how Hogan's kind of this older, like a lot of people are nostalgic for him and sort of the old hero, and then Brock is the up and coming sort of ruthless beast that wants to destroy him. So I thought it was good to hype the what this show is going to be about.
Yeah, agreed. That video was quite extra about Hogan. You know, it fit for what we're doing.
Yeah, and it's so weird to watch these with current eyes, given like the goodwill for Hogan at this in this time frame is so high, like with him coming back for the nostalgia run and even what we'll get to what he does on this show and all. It's like it was like this Hogan sort of redemption tour in this period, and we know where it goes, so that kind of sucks. But yeah. But anyway, Taz tells us that this main event will be a rocket buster.
Yes.
This may be one of his first rocket busters that I've seen since he's been on SmackDown. So maybe have to keep a tally of how many rocket busters we get. But contrary to Raw, like you pointed out, Jenny, we come out pretty much straight away with a match on SmackDown, which is kind of more SmackDown's MO, as we're going to get Angle and Cena, who have met quite a few times before. This kind of goes with the normal Cena match type that we've seen so far since he's debuted, where he's usually fighting somebody who's a veteran, in this case Angle, and he's like kind of surprisingly scrappy, even though it's not really surprising because he's had enough matches at this point, where he's kind of reversing stuff that you wouldn't think he would be able to reverse. Like in this one, Angle goes for the rolling Germans, and he's kind of able to reverse that. Then eventually the veteran gets the advantage. So Angle gets the advantage, starts working him over. And then Cena gets a little comeback. But then Angle kind of cuts him off. They go into the ankle lock. But Cena again escapes that. Again, constantly pushing that Cena's kind of scrappy and he can escape everything. We get Cena hits a sick drop kick. And Angle, as usual, sells his ass off flying into the steps outside. And then out of nowhere, Chris Benoit randomly comes in and locks in the crossface on Cena for the DQ, and that kind of ends the match. But before that, it was pretty, you know, it was like I said, the typical Cena performance in this frame since he's debuted, where he kind of follows a similar match structure, but it's pretty good. And Angle is a super pro, but I do feel at this point with Cena, I'm kind of ready to see like what's phase two for him. Like what is, like past just him being scrappy baby face who can kind of hang with these veteran guys. But what is he going to do next? I think we've established that. But as a match, I went 2.5. It was fun, but nothing maybe spectacular.
So I've seen maybe like 5 Cena matches ever. Maybe. So I was kind of curious about this, and my last episode with you had me feeling a lot better about Kurt as well, so I was like, well, let me see where this goes, and I actually ended up really enjoying it, and I was like, okay, you know, obviously there's a reason why John Cena became John Cena. He knows what he's doing, like even though he is, like you say, that they call him this kid all the time. I'm like, he looks at least 35. Like, what? How old is he here? I have no idea. But, you know, all of that definitely comes through in the match. And my score was basically including the post-match stuff that we didn't talk about yet, which I really thought added a bunch to it. So, all in total, 2.75 stars.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I went 2.5 on it, and we can get into the post-match, so we can kind of get into that. But yeah, it's just a solid Cena performance. So, like you alluded to, Ray comes in. He makes the save to break up Benoit going after him. But then Eddie also comes out. He cuts off Ray, and then Edge comes out to help Ray and Cena. And we kind of end up with the baby faces standing tall. And I thought it was a cool moment for Cena getting the stand with, you know, all these guys like Eddie and Edge and Ray, who are, you know, like Edge is obviously still young too at this point, but Cena is like super rookie. So a big moment for him to be standing with, you know, all of these guys, and we get the faces standing tall, and we kind of get kind of a big moment here because we're missing, I think, one guy because Cena would not really be involved with this, but this is sort of the forming of the SmackDown Six, basically, that we're seeing here. Besides, so
if is that you, like, well, the secret police of SmackDown?
It's basically like this era, they're sort of credited with kind of carrying the show and making SmackDown the show that you watched if you were like into awesome wrestling, because it would be like these six guys like Eddie, Ray, Benoit, Edge, Angle. I have to make sure I'm naming everybody. Yeah, Edge, Eddie, Benoit, Ray. Like they would all kind of carry these shows. And like you knew when you were going to watch it that these guys are all awesome wrestlers and that you're going to see some awesome matches and them sort of all feuding together. And like basically establishing SmackDown is like if you're into wrestling, like if you're into matches and, you know, work rate and that sort of thing, SmackDown's going to be your show because of all these guys kind of thing.
Where are you at on Cena? Like, besides wanting to see him evolve or whatever, just overall?
Like, in this era? Like
just overall, as a wrestler.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's, you know, he has moments and all, but he kind of has this thing where he kind of has a curve, and that he definitely has a stretch where he's overexposed and everything, but I think he's, as a wrestler, he's, especially with his later stuff in the last 5 years or so, where he's really, really kind of established himself as a really great wrestler, and it's hard to argue with his sort of resume. And yeah, it's hard to say because it's also the eras he's in. It's but I'm not like an anti-Cena person, but I'm also the time frame I think most people don't like him in. It's kind of one of my least familiar times that I'm not like, you know, like late or whatever. It's kind of one of my dark spells, if you will, like kind of, I was sort of out on it. So maybe that helps him for me because I don't know I'm not really familiar as much with the time when people are like sick up and want him to go away and that kind of thing.
Yeah. I've always been like, I've always kind of known that was like a thing, but I don't know why or like the whole story about it. So, you know, that's something to maybe become interested in. I don't know. Maybe have somebody drunkenly explain it to me. Yeah. Be great.
Yeah. So, but yeah, so I agree with you, though. The post-match was really awesome. Like, just them all running in like that. And
oh, yeah, just timed, like, staggered out. And then they just hit this awesome move. And then, boom, this guy comes out, boom, murders this guy. Like, what the shit is happening?
And kind of establishing, like, the face-heel line, too, I thought was good to show that, you know, who's going to be aligning with each other, which they go into a little bit further in our next segment where we see Mark Lloyd. Any thoughts on Mark Lloyd, Jenny, or SmackDown interviewer?
No, I didn't even know who that guy was. I didn't even write his name down.
Yeah, it took me about 14 times seeing him before I caught on to
like what he who? Was. I have no idea.
The spiky blonde hair guy. But he asked Benoit and Eddie why they came to SmackDown. And Eddie says he doesn't like that question, that they came because this is the place with the best competition. Eddie puts over Benoit tapping out The Rock last week, which was a big moment for him. Angle then comes in and says, "Peep this, Holmes. He's the master of submission, and they ruined his match because he was about to beat Cena, and they came in and got him disqualified." Benoit says that Angle was about to lose, and so he looked like he needed some help anyway, and that SmackDown has the best competition or something. I didn't totally get, he really didn't explain well why he even ran in, but I guess it doesn't matter. Kurt then says, let's go. But then Eddie, basically Benoit and Kurt are about to fight, but then Eddie sort of gets between them. And he says that, they are really the future of SmackDown and that Cena, Edge and Ray are the real enemies, basically. It just sort of sets up these three against Cena, Edge and Ray as sort of the, like I said, drawing the face heel lines here. And it is interesting, like on the Cena discussion, like I mentioned, the SmackDown six, and these guys are all the, so Cena is kind of like the odd man out and who would be considered the SmackDown six, because it's really Eddie, Benoit, Cena, Edge, Ray, and then randomly, definitely sort of the odd man out anyway, I think it ends up being Chavo. So
Oh, shit, really?
So it's not really Cena. He's kind of in it here. So like I said, we're almost, we're like at the SmackDown 5, but Cena's going to kind of get shuffled out at some point. But again, we could definitely see that they definitely went into this show with like, okay, we're going to establish like these are our faces, these are our heels, and kind of push this, which I think is good because there's just a shitload of talent in this group.
I liked Eddie, I think it was Eddie, making fun of The Rock tapping out the week before. Yeah. That was pretty hilarious. Yeah. And then Kurt just, you know, getting his feelings hurt about being the master of submission. That was pretty good. I enjoyed him a lot in this show.
Yeah, I'm always hesitant to try and do like Eddie. I don't think I can ever do like his lines justice because I don't want to do his voice because it very easily could be, I think, super offensive if I try and do Eddie Guerrero's like delivery. So I stray away from it. But yeah, he's awesome here. I like how he kept the peace between them and was like, no, we have to fight these guys. But all right, we continue on. We now get the Reverend Devon, who's going to be facing Mark Henry in this one, which has kind of been a semi little simmering feud that's kind of popped up every now and then. Devon is, of course, with Batista here. Any impressions of this early Batista, Jen?
What? This is going to sound stupid, but I'm just going to say it. I'm always surprised that Batista is not blue because he's supposed to be blue. What
is blue? Why is he on blue tights?
He just like a blue from Guardians of the Galaxy because his skin is blue in that movie.
Why is his body not blue?
Like, he just looks so weird. Like he's not finished, right? Like, where's the rest of him? Like, it looks,
that's amazing.
The CGI is just not up to par in this episode of SmackDown.
He wouldn't turn blue until, you know, mid-06 or whatever. Yeah. No.
Which is ridiculous because his body is fucking insane. And like, holy shit, like, he looks amazing. Like, a lot of these guys look amazing, but like, he is next level.
Yeah, he is jacked like to a level of absurdity.
The cutness is just like sharp. Like, it's just like I'll touch the TV and like cut my finger because it's insane.
Yeah, he's like a sculpture. But and what is normal at this time is that you kind of think he would be in the match, but he's not. It's Devon. He's just sort of in the corner, and I guess it's kind of protect him because he's still pretty green or whatever. But so we start the match. Henry does this. So Henry is just beating the shit out of Devon to start this off. He does his cool where he puts the guy on the ropes, and he kind of does a slide where he falls out of the ring onto their neck, which always looks really good because of his size. Mark Henry's such an odd guy because he looks like such a beast, and they kind of put him at, like, he's portrayed as a beast at some points, and then also, like, at other points, even in this match, he comes off like a jobber to the stars, where then Devon gets an offense, and he just sells everything Devon does, which is weird, because he just looks like such a monster. But Henry does end up when he comes back and wins with the power slam, and it was kind of mostly, I would say, pretty much domination by Mark Henry besides a few spots with Devon. So I went star and a half on it. It was pretty fun. I liked watching Mark Henry's power offense.
Mark Henry is really fun to watch, like, just across the board. I, you know, he can bump around a little bit. That's fine. I'll watch it. You know, that's fine. But when he's in there murdering Devon, that's the shit I want to see. He is so good at that. And I don't know. He just has this huge presence. He got them thick thighs, and you know, he's just a fun wrestler to watch.
Yeah, it's, and I guess like the rap on him is that he was never that good until later in his career. But it's always weird to me that he just kind of, like in at this point, like, yeah, he came in and won this match. And it definitely seems like you're trying to set him up Batista with this post match, but just he seems kind of underutilized through much of his career. And I guess, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. Like the stuff you see with him, for whatever reason, they never had any faith in him to do anything more than this. But in these small doses like this, he looks awesome. Like you wish
I love that mm-hmm. that rope slide, whatever
yeah.
he did. That was awesome. Precision too. It was great.
Yeah. So post match, they are obviously pissed off D-Von and Batista, so they double team Mark Henry, but then Big Keish comes out. Rikishi comes out to make the save. He tells D-Von to let Batista come after him. And so then we get an impromptu Batista versus Rikishi match here. So I thought Batista's
right.
Yeah, yeah, just impromptu hoss match here. I think Batista's facials here are a little bit corny, a little bit over the top. I know he's trying to act like a beast or whatever, but he's a little bit too, you know, he needs to tone it down a little bit. Comes off very kind of, I don't know how to say it. Like, I don't want to say indie, but, you know, he sounds like he looks like he's trying a little bit too hard, I guess mm-hmm, is the best way mm-hmm. to put it. We get some good power from him, though. But he also does, like, he hits some good power moves, but you could tell maybe he's not super confident in what he's doing because I find he stalls a decent amount. Mm-hmm. Batista, like, he goes for a lot of, like, foot chokes and sort of like he's trying to kill time mm-hmm. At certain points. So, like, he has a few good big power moves, but then stalls out. He then cuts off, but Rikishi goes for his ass-based comeback, but Batista cuts it off and avoids that. D-Von is up on the apron, and they sort of sell this throughout the match that D-Von keeps trying to get involved, but finally he gets on the apron. He accidentally hits Batista, and then Rikishi wins with a kick and pins Batista with a kick. And so obviously the blame kind of goes on D-Von, but I went a similar rating to the last match. I thought this was a pretty good hoss match. The weakness for me was like, Batista, I thought, was just a little bit too much with the stalling. I would have 1.5 on it, but it was pretty fun for what it was.
Yeah, I'm at about 2 stars, but that's mostly for Rikishi's ass, honestly. And I just don't really want to see.
Cheek.
Yeah, exactly. I don't really want to see this motherfucker, you know, with a boot stomp on the fucking throat or a knee to the throat on the, you know what I'm saying? Like you said, there was this like hesitation to him, like, unsure what to do. Maybe, I don't know. It wasn't bad. But just seemed a little bit off, but Rikishi is fun. And I liked the not really showdown, but you know, they were in their each other's face a little bit. Batista and D-Von by the end.
Yeah, you could see they're sort of sowing the seeds of a split between those two, which I think makes sense. I think it's kind of run its course. Like, they put him with D-Von to kind of introduce him and sort of carry him through. But I think he's established himself where he needs to sort of be put on his own. And I think if they do, I don't know if they're going to continue this Rikishi thing or if this is like a one-off. But I think Rikishi's a pretty good guy to put him with because mm-hmm. he's a pro. He's a big guy, so it's a good pairing. But, yeah, he's got a... It's like he, like you said, that's a good way to put it. Like, he seems like unsure of himself. Like, he doesn't really know what to do mm-hmm. when he's not just going in there and hitting one big move. It's like right. he needs to figure out some, I guess, some transitions or something.
And it's like, use your body, dude. Like, mm-hmm. look at you, man. Like, just pick him up. Like, do some shit, you know? It's like, it just feels like he needs like a little bit of a pep talk or something. I don't know.
Yeah, so he'll be one that's interesting to see how he, you know, how long it takes him to, like, get it. Because obviously he does get it at some point. So, all right. So we head to another big hoss, Brock Lesnar, as he tells a worried Paul Heyman that he's ready, that he wants to storm into Hogan's locker room. And Heyman's really good here, panicking. Like,
love it.
Yeah, and so Brock barges in, and we get barges into Hogan's locker room. We get a stare down between the two, and Brock asks him if he really wants to go in there and end his career, which is a really good line. Like, just already like booking it like that it's going to end his career. And Hogan says that if it were him, he put the title shot on the line, and Brock is extremely cocky, so he agrees with it. So Brock has now just agreed to put his SummerSlam title shot on the line. I enjoyed this a good bit. I like that they're letting Brock show more personality, because when he first debuted, he had this similar thing like I just talked about with Batista, where he'd do all these facials that were a little bit over the top. And now they've kind of pivoted him a little bit to more of a kind of a, I don't know how to explain it. Like, he's a little more like calm, but he's sort of seething and like full of himself sort of thing, and kind of seems like manipulative at points. Like, he's real full of himself and condescending to people. It works a lot better. He seems like he's not just a big dumb idiot. Like, he has like a brain, and he's like more, I don't know. I hate to say cerebral because it's so tied to Triple H, but
that's too strong of a word. I was sort of surprised to see this much personality out of Brock, especially with Paul. You know, that was a fun little back and forth that they had there with Paul freaking out. One thing I don't enjoy about Brock is his voice. Like, that's not intimidating at all. Like, it doesn't match the rest of him. So maybe that's why they don't let him talk too much. It's because his voice doesn't.
Yeah, he sounds like he's from Fargo. Like,
yeah,
the movie Fargo.
It doesn't sound good. And that's, I mean, sorry about it, but there's not much you can do about your voice. So I enjoyed their little fight, you know, after, you know, as soon as Brock comes out of the locker room, Paul Heyman, what the hell?
Yeah, he tells him.
Mind so good,
and he does a good little to hype the match where Heyman basically like puts over Hogan while giving the reason why Brock just made a bad decision, but like saying like, well, Hogan's been overcoming everything his entire career, and that he just got played, and then Brock questions like Heyman's confidence, so adds some good tension to it. And I like the little touch of Hogan kind of being the veteran and knowing how to like talk his way into a better spot sort of thing, against like a young guy who maybe doesn't, you know, is maybe overconfident, or that he sees as overconfident. So it's good. Add some good tension, some extra tension to the main event, which I'm on board with. Okay. So next up, right after this, we just cut to in the same shot, actually. So some fun camera work here. Is that there's not even a cut. We just turn down the hallway and we see Tori is attacking Nydia in her draws, as it were.
That's hot, right?
Yeah, she's in her negligee attacking Nydia. So apparently something went down with them. I don't know if they even say what the reason was. It's just kind of like randomly just beating the piss out of Nydia, like smacking her in her underwear.
I don't know that I've ever seen Nydia before in my life. So I was like, who is this?
Oh, well, we'll get to them in a second. I really want to get your opinion on Nydia and Jamie Noble, because I'm a big fan. They're real fun. But before we get to them, we have to talk about Billy and Chuck, who will be facing, they're our former tag team champions, but no longer. They will be facing the Hurricane and Shannon Moore. This will be Shannon Moore's debut. And Jen, this is a big conflict stemming from Velocity. This was built up on Velocity. How do you like that?
Oh, shit. I love a Velocity storyline.
Big Velocity feud boiling over on SmackDown. Rico is in an absurd, he's like in a cheetah zoot suit, is how I would describe it here. Just completely absurd.
Did you kill outfit. A cheetah?
Yeah. And then, so Shannon Moore, this is his debut. To me, and I think you'll appreciate this as someone who has a TNA podcast, he just like scream X Division to me. Like, he looked
God,
like
an, yes.
He looked like such an X Division guy, like for better and for worse, and that he looked really athletic and can do a lot of cool stuff. Like, he looked like he was going to do a lot of high flying moves, but he also looked like I would be worried that he was not going to have like any kind of character or personality, sort of. Like, they were just going to throw him out there and he would just be a guy who does moves. But yeah, they kind of build this up pretty well in kind of the clash of styles here, in that Billy and Chuck are more power, and then Shannon Moore and the Hurricane are more like cruiserweights with their speed. And I thought they did a good job of sort of putting that actually into the match, where instead of just saying it but not really doing it. So they kind of work a normal sort of tag structure. The Hurricane plays the face in peril, but is able to get a hot tag whenever Billy is kind of being cocky at one point. We get a Shannon Moore hot tag. He gets a few moves in, but then he gets cut off. The faces at this point in the match look doomed. as a hurricane gets neutralized on the outside, but he buys just enough time to avoid the code red due to the hurricane kind of delaying it, and he is able to roll up Chuck and get the upset win here for the upstart Shannon Moore, which was, I thought, a pretty fun upset and a good debut for him. And I always like Hurricane. He's solid. Everything he does looks pretty good. I'm a big Hurricane fan. He's a good hand, as they say. Like, he always looks pretty smooth. I don't know if you're a Hurricane fan. But, yeah, this is a fun one. I went 2 3/4. I thought it was a pretty fun little match. And I like the difference in the two teams and how they worked that into the story of the match. Fun stuff.
I swear we are on the exact same wavelength, because I really enjoyed this, too. I thought the hot tags were really well done. Moore got a nice neck breaker in there. Fucking Hurricane choke slammed one of them. I think it was Billy.
Yeah.
So that was fun to see, because he's kind of a little guy. And so this is one of the two TNA-style matches that I kind of identified on this match. This being, like you said, sort of an X Division-y feel and a positive TNA match. And then later on, we'll talk about the more negative of that. But yeah, I really liked it too. 2.5 stars.
Yeah, it was a fun one. And I'm interested to see if Hurricane and Shannon Moore stay as a team. I think they do for a little while, but we'll see. All right. So that was fun. We'll continue on. Cena is backstage. He is doing his... So his character right now is something that we were talking about Cena earlier, you know, that I'm not into, and that his thing is almost like he's this intense screaming guy. And so we cut to him, and he's talking to Edge and just like screaming about what happened earlier, and Edge tells him to like chill out, basically, and says that they're going to get revenge. But I'm not feeling this. I think he's pretty good in ring even right now, but his character and just his whole presentation is not great. He comes off as very generic.
I thought it was funny just to play off Edge. Like, Edge, yeah, yeah. Like, literally, like, put hands on him, like, dude, you gotta calm down. Like, I just enjoyed it just for Edge's reaction. And then Ray just fucking doing pull-ups, yeah, in the background. Just, like, fuck these guys. Look how badass I am. And he looked awesome doing that. And then he's like, whatever, just leave Angle to me. I'm like, yeah, oh, yeah, that was pretty hot, Ray.
Yeah, Ray's good stuff. I like Ray. So we'll see. We'll see if this comes to a head later on, which it will. Spoiler, but we then see Heyman. He's in Stephanie's office. He wants to speak to her about what Brock set up earlier. And Steph says she actually thinks it's a great idea that they put the title shot on the line, and that it's possible that if Hogan wins, now we would get Rock Hogan 2 at some, basically saying that each option would be good because you either get Brock, which is great, or you get Rock Hogan 2. And I thought it's kind of seemed a bit like an empty segment, but I did like that it sells a little bit that Hogan could possibly win this because you could see them wanting to do Rock and Hogan again at SummerSlam. So I thought it puts a little doubt on maybe Hogan pulling this off, which I thought was good.
I always enjoy Stephanie and Paul together as well.
Yeah. This is, Steph is cool in this. She's looking good. Put it she that is. Way. All right. So we'll go to our, basically sorry the about match.
That. You're coming to get me, Jake. They finally found me. All right. I escaped again.
We now get our SmackDown 6 match that we were that was hyped earlier. So this will be Cena, Rey, and Edge versus Benoit, Eddie, and Angle in a six-man. So really good focus in this one, and really was sort of the story of the match is the heels going after Cena, and they kind of isolate him. And especially Angle's really good at it, but since Benoit's return in this era, like Eddie and Benoit are just like killer as like relentless heels attacking people and like isolating them, and they do all the quick tags and put them in the corner. They're just so good at it. Like everything they do looks so tight, and they're just like decimating them. Eddie does the tope con Hilo that he's been working on a lot on these shows, which always looks good. I like Taz saying the And that was a fun thing, Taz. Like, so Michael Cole does that same thing that they do all the time, like the wrestling trope of like, well, when it's the heels, like, is that a chin lock or a choke? And then Taz comes in, he's like, you know what? That's a bunch of bullshit. Like, a chin lock and a choke. Like, if it's a choke, you'd have your hand around their neck. Like, a chin lock and a choke. Like, he's like, who cares? Like, it's the same thing. Like, which I thought was funny because I kind of always think that when I'm watching wrestling, like, who cares if a chin lock's a choke? So,
Taz will tell you.
Yeah. I like Taz. He's really good.
I love Taz.
And they did a great job in this match. I thought calling it kind of pointing out the narrative that they're going after the rookie and everything, like really contrasting with Raw where you have King saying all his dumb shit and then you have Cole and Taz really focused on what's going on and selling the feud and selling the story. Ray comes in. Ray actually delays Eddie, and that's what is able to save Cena. Thought that was cool as, like, actually having a key moment in the match to kind of save Cena from getting his ass beat. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of go into – this is the part of the match I didn't love so much because this kind of bothers me at points, and it's all really good. These guys are all awesome. All their moves are awesome, and they at least make this smooth. But I'm never a big fan of, like, at the end of a big six-man when it's like everybody runs in and just hits their shit. And that's kind of that's kind of what they went to with this one. Like, everybody's just kind of running in, no tags, and they all kind of just get their shit in until finally Ray hits the 619 on Kurt and then hits his springboard run and wins it. So, yeah, this was definitely – it makes you – it's really promising for SmackDown. The crowd was fucking loving it too. But even though I didn't like the ending spot so much, I still thought this was a really good match. I went 3.25 on it. Like I said, if this is what they're going to be bringing to SmackDown, it's very promising for SmackDown to have all these guys involved like this because they all can, like, they all can work their ass off, and this was a really fun match.
What a fucking mix of wrestlers, too. Just, like, you know, just different, mostly kind of different guys, and, you know, like you said, they're all just on fire and just putting work in. Like, you can tell they're working hard, and it, for me, it pays off. Like, I felt like this was a 3-star match, at least for me. I'm okay with the bomb dropping at the end just because I'm a move slut, number one, and and I thought it was kind of built to, because, you know, Cena pretty much got his ass handed to him for most of the match in a, like, a really fun, clever way by getting, you know, cut off by Eddie and Benoit a lot. But, you know, I think that the bomb dropping was okay after we had gotten sort of the intricacies of the match sort of worked through. Like, you know, they did a lot of real fun work there. And then, you know, go in, everybody drop your bombs, okay, and then do the 619. So I kind of really liked that. Awesome, like, fun story. I don't know. This is just fucking fun wrestling to watch.
And so, like, you asked about the SmackDown 6. This is kind of what, like, this is SmackDown 6. Like, when people talk about them, like, this is the kind of stuff they're talking about, where they would just, you know, send all these guys out there and let them, like, have 15 minutes and go have great matches.
That's awesome. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's, I mean, what else can, why not do that?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm looking forward to it. But it's kind of cool to see them kind of, this is sort of the episode where it's all kind of coming to motion, which is fun. And to their credit too, like I said, like, to me, it didn't ruin the match or anything. It's not like that. It's kind of like some of them never that into. But they do acknowledge it on commentary. And it was, I think, a little bit purposeful here because Taz kind of mentions, like, well, I don't know if Ray was the legal man here. And so
I forgot about that.
So they kind of do sell it that they at least acknowledge that all the guys that they kind of lost control and everybody was running in. And it's sort of part of the story here because now Kurt has a reason to complain because we didn't go to him backstage and he's pissed off. And he says, I got pinned by a 12-year-old kid. But he goes into some very offensive saying that not only was Ray the illegal man in the match, but he's probably an illegal citizen. He has no integrity. And he probably doesn't even have the word integrity in his very limited vocab, but pretty soon broken ankle will be in his vocabulary. So good promo by Kurt, and kind of a good setup to align him and Ray, because it definitely seems like that's where they're going. So I thought it was, at least if they're going to like, it definitely seems like they did the whole everybody run in so they could, so Kirk could have something to complain about to kind of set up the feud. So it works in that sense.
Which is, you know, pretty great reason to get another, you know, another match or something out of this. Like, you know, Kurt being Kurt and bitching about being pinned by a 12-year-old. It's pretty funny and pretty smart.
So I wonder what he would have thought of, like, WCW, Ray, because Ray here is, like, kind of jacked up. So he must think, like, WCW Ray was, like, a 6-year-old child or something.
He was very tiny.
Yeah. We then get Cole and Taz hyping up the movie Triple X, which brought me right back to 2002, which Taz says is his buddy or his man, Vin Diesel. So Taz definitely looks like somebody would be super into Vin Diesel. So I guess that made sense.
And Cole said, "You know Vin Diesel?" He's like, "Of course I know Vin Diesel." Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Of course I know Cole. He's my good pal. Yeah, so good cross promotion with them in the film Triple X, which is an absurd movie. Hopefully Sousa covers that on Piece of Action, because that's a ridiculous movie. All right, so we go to, you were interested early, Jenny, about Nydia. So we're actually going to get a mixed tag match here with Jamie Noble and Nydia versus Kidman and Tori. So sort of a battle of these two couples. All right, not a whole lot going on in this match. I thought basically this whole match was just, it was kind of like a framing device to get two things accomplished, I think. And that is, one, to get the women involved so everybody could look at Tori and Nydia and kind of, like, for some babe action, and then to align Kidman and Noble as possibly feuding, because there was not a whole lot going on in this match. The most notable spot was Kidman and Tori spanking Nydia, and then Nydia actually winning as she schoolboys Tori and gets the one with her. But other than that, not a whole lot going on this match. Jamie Noble takes some good bumps like he normally does, but yeah, I want to star in the match because, again, it wasn't much of a match. It didn't seem – a mixed tag is always a weird match because when people have to tag in certain situations, it's like only so much they can do. But, yeah, one star. I don't know where you went on this, Jenny.
Well, okay. So I really like intergender wrestling, like, but I didn't really have much hope that that would be anywhere close to what we would get here. I'm just kind of – here's the second TNA match of the night. So this is sort of the more baldy TNA flavor with the spanking, which, you know, was fun. I enjoyed that. But like you said, not much really going here. The ladies are very hot, so I gave it a star as well.
Yeah, I'm upset that you get to see more of Noble and Nydia in showing their personality, because basically they kind of alluded to it here, but on the last episode, Nydia gave Michael Cole essentially a lap dance, and the thing is, like, Noble is kind of into it, like they kind of have a cuck thing going on where he kind of gets into it. Yeah, he kind of gets into it. And the thing is, like, they're, like, supposed to be, like, hillbillies, kind of. And now he's the champion, so they got to move out. Now they have a trailer that actually has running water and stuff. So they're, like, living the high life. And
it's very exciting.
And so, like, he gets Nydia to, like, kind of kiss other people or, like, rub on them and stuff. And then he's like, "Yeah, you like that, boy." And then he gets kind of upset after and then gets mad at them. So that's kind of what they have.
A confused cuck angle. I like it.
Yeah, but they're just awesome because his voice just, his promos are amazing because he just kind of screams in, like, a very southern dialect, I'll say. But yeah, so we'll see if it looks like he and Kidman are going to be feuding, unless they keep the intergender part going. But anyway, all right. This next segment. Okay, so we go backstage and see Dawn Marie, who is greeted by Stacy in Stephanie's office, as Stacy has been Steph's assistant in the same way she was Vince's assistant. And Dawn Marie has, quote, the papers that she's supposed to be bringing. Stacy brags about Vince, and she says that Vince has actually had the Marriott in the presidential suite, which Dawn seems very intrigued by. And basically, Stacy tricks her into going to see Vince, leaving the papers, and Stacy says she'll give them to Stephanie. And Dawn can leave if she wants to, because Dawn wants to go see Vince at the presidential suite at the Marriott. Stacy then hides the papers underneath the sofa, and when Stephanie comes in, she says that Dawn didn't bring anything, which Stephanie is very upset about because she's supposed to be bringing these papers, and then tells Stephanie that Dawn didn't bring anything, and then she's going to meet Vince at the Marriott. Steph then apologizes for being so hard on Stacy in the last episode, and then walks out of the office. And lo and behold, lurking in the back, literally hiding behind a bush, is Eric Bischoff, who comes out with a shitting grin on his face. And Stacy gives him these papers, and they laugh. And that's sort of the end of the segment. So not really sure what the papers are supposed to be. So we're left on a bit of a cliffhanger.
What? Also, I was hoping you would know what the papers were.
No, I don't know.
I was dying. I was like, what are they?
Well, you'll have to tune in next week to see what this goes. But not very secret of him to do this with a cameraman in the room, I would think. Right? Yeah.
And it was funny because I didn't notice Eric hide behind the tree during the scene because it's all one scene.
Yeah.
So I'm watching it back now. And they do a cut and, like, go back to her, like, right on the couch. And then Steph comes in. And so I'm like, at what point does Eric come and hide behind the tree? Because once you see him back there, you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah, how did I miss him?
Like, how did I miss him? He was right there. So, I mean, I hate to fucking laugh at Eric again, but I did. That was pretty funny. But, yeah, I'm very intrigued with the documents.
Yeah, it's always strange to me because it's not the first time they do it. When they allude to all these women like banging Vince to Stephanie, it's like very strange. It's like, just always a yeah, it's like an awkward kind of dynamic. But yeah, so apparently Bischoff has a mole, has infiltrated the SmackDown offices. So high drama here in the GM wars, the brand wars. So. All right, so we'll have to find out what are on the papers next week, unfortunately. All right, so we get ready to hype our big main event between Brock and Hogan. We get a Hogan promo backstage. He talks about conventional wisdom, saying conventional wisdom would say he doesn't have a chance, but conventional wisdom also said that he wouldn't get the title again like he did earlier in the year. And then he, of course, asked the question, what you gonna do, Brock? What you gonna do when Hulkamania runs wild on you, brother? So pretty standard Hogan stuff, but I thought it was okay to hype a little, last little bit of hype before we go into the actual match.
Yeah, so. I mean, not bad. I'm not usually super into a Hogan promo, but not bad at all.
Yeah, I agree. It was nothing to write home about, but it was okay. It's just, you know, a little pre-match promo. All right, so we now go to our main event, which has been pretty solidly built through this show and what happened last week. And the crowd is pretty lit for this one. The crowd is like ready for it. And I think that's a testament to the hype. Both guys are over the Hogan. Even though the Hogan train is kind of fading at this point, like the nostalgia run, the crowd still likes to see him, and Brock is really over as a heel at this point. So we get started. Hogan, he gets a little bit of offense in the start, but then we kind of go into Brock just picking him apart a bit. Hogan is able to come back a little bit when Brock goes out to the ring. He starts doing the clearing the announce table deal where he throws the monitors and everything, which buys Hogan a little bit of time and lets him come back a little bit. Mm-hmm. They head back into the ring, and this completely shocked me, but Brock kind of takes him off the top rope and hits Hogan with like a sick power bomb. I was really surprised that Hogan took that, like that old man Hogan took that power bomb. So that was pretty cool. Brock works him over a little bit more, but then we get the Hulk up after this, and Hogan actually hits the leg drop, does the whole Hogan thing, but then Brock kicks out, not only kicks out, but it's not even really a near fall. He basically kicks out right on two and kind of tosses Hogan off of the cover. So big moment there, him kicking out of the Hogan leg drop. Mm-hmm. Heyman then jumps on the apron, which kind of causes a bit of a distraction, which allows Brock to come in with the F5, but he does not cover him. Instead, he goes to the bear hug, which has kind of been one of his spots. And then he proceeds to squeeze the life out of Hogan, who starts to bleed from the mouth. And the ref calls it at that point. And so Hogan is bleeding from the mouth. Should we go to the post-match at this point, Jenny?
Yeah, let's just tell all of it, yeah.
Yeah, because it all goes together. So yeah. After the match, Brock sort of acts like he's leaving. So Hogan is left in a heap in the ring, bleeding from the mouth, looking pretty brutal. And then Brock comes in, grabs a chair, and then cracks Hogan clean on the skull. Pretty sick chair shot. Hogan's really taking some shots in this one. We get a Rock chant because the crowd now wants the Rock to come in and save Hogan. Mm-hmm. So it definitely seems like the show's going to end. And I was kind of like, it was to the point where I almost, like, I know this moment, but it became so close to, and I was like, he's just going to walk off. Did I like misremember mm-hmm. this? And this is on a different episode. But right at the end, he's going up the ramp. He comes back again in the ring and grabs Hogan by the head and kind of tells him a few things close up and smears the blood on his hands and then takes Hogan's blood and rubs it on his chest. And then when he's walking out, I thought this is a good little subtle touch. He kind of, I don't know if he actually spit on Hogan, but he kind of spits near him at least. Mm-hmm. And kind of spits on the ground by him and then walks out to close the show like a monster. Mm. So, Jed, what did you think? Did this hit for you with Brock destroying Hogan?
Yeah, like you, I wasn't ready for that finish, for the bear hug thing. And then when I saw him bleeding from the mouth, I was like, okay, all right, I like this because, look, every Hulk match I've ever watched, he fucking wins. So I'm like, hey, let's not have him win. And then, you know, I was like, okay, well, you know, that's pretty badass. I mean, like, I feel like, what's the big deal kind of thing? And then he goes back and does the chair shot. I'm like, oh, okay, here we go. That looks better. And so he's bleeding from the mouth and the head. And then, like you said, like the pacing of this is like real. It keeps you real on edge. Like, wait, what's he going to do? Like, I was really dialed in on Brock in particular mm-hmm. in this match, which is very odd for me. I'm not super, you know, a Lesnar fan, but, mm-hmm. You know, I thought he was really good in this. And then coming back and smearing the blood on his chest, all right, I'm down for that shit. I mean, that is fucked up, and it's the Hulk Hogan, and I mean, it was badass. I all kinds of big dick energy on this 4-star match for me.
Wow, yeah, so it depends. Yeah, I think if I was grading the whole pack, it's one of those things where it's like the match and then the whole deal, because the whole moment is like classic. It's super good. Mm-hmm. I went 2.5, but I think it's just because I was looking mainly at the match and like if it ended with Hogan with the bear hug, which was an awesome finish. But and even for a Hogan match in this era, I mean, 2.5 is pretty damn good. Mm-hmm. I mean, your boy Triple H did not get that out of Hogan. Mm-mm. So so definitely not like a technical marvel or anything, but really good storytelling in here. Mm-hmm. And I thought the blood in this was like different than what you'd expect, because it's like he didn't just bust his head or anything. Like him bleeding from the mouth, and it didn't seem like unrealistic or anything or stupid or over the top. And I thought Hogan was really good in this. Mm-hmm. Like his selling, like when he's in the bear hug, he easily could have went into like some overdramatic, like Hogan hammy sell job, but he just kind of like
faded.
Yeah, he just like faded out and like flopped over and was like bleeding all over. Mm-hmm. And of course he's like soaked in sweat, and then he's got blood all over his bald head. Like he looked like he was getting murdered, like mm-hmm. legit getting killed, which I thought was good. And yeah, Brock is just so good through all this. All his, like I said, he's really kind of changed from being somebody who comes in with like the over the top sort of sneering and like kind of goofy heel beast sort of thing. And now he seems more like just a badass, like that he's trying to prove a point that he's going to make an example out of Hogan. And I think this whole thing just really elevates him, because I think they've done a good job building him, but you know, he's about to face The Rock for the title, which is a huge spot. And I think this is a really awesome thing to elevate him and really make him come across as like a threat. Who's like, I think this is a point where you're like, if you didn't think before, like they might put the title on this guy and run with him, you're like, oh shit, they might. And credit to Hogan for like, you know, coming in there as somebody who's not known for always doing stuff like this. Like he really went in there and like put Brock over strong in this match. So the whole package is just, it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely judged all of it together to get the 4 stars for sure. But yeah, like, and just Brock's just complete enjoyment of it too really comes through. It really just by a smile on his face, right? So like he does like these little subtle things that I've never really noticed before. But like you said, Hogan was really good in this too. And Paul too, Paul on the sidelines. Paul just wants him to fucking pin him, especially after the F5. He's like, God damn it.
Yeah,
Brock
don't
just
lose
pinned
this
him.
title
Like,
match.
this is Hulk Hogan, you motherfucker.
It's my money,
He
dude.
doesn't lose matches, you know? So I really enjoyed Paul just absolutely losing it. And then Brock just whatever the fuck with you. Not even giving two shits about what Paul is freaking out about and just does not give any care about this fucking Hogan guy. Like, it's great. It's really good.
Yeah, like you could tell Brock is getting the character part of this down. Like he's obviously physically like a beast, but you know, he definitely separated himself from any chance of him just being like a generic big jacked up dude, like that he had some personality. So yeah, this is awesome. This is such a classic moment. I love the whole thing. But and we end on that very happy note of Hulk Hogan getting murdered in the ring.
Murdered, yes.
But this whole episode of SmackDown, I thought this was super strong. Really good episode of SmackDown. You had like awesome matches. The opener was good. The six man was good. Even the little tag with Billy and Chuck and Hurricane and Shannon Moore was good. Thought the whole show moved at a pretty good pace, and you could definitely see like SmackDown kind of starting to create its own identity in that. Really pushing itself as a different show than Raw, like that it's going to be a unique show from Raw. And I guess you could say too that I think by this point Heyman is running SmackDown like legit, so he's putting this all together. So you could kind of see him starting to like you're starting to see his fingerprints on the show, like that. Yeah, so I went 7 out of 10. This was a really strong one, definitely one of the stronger SmackDowns I've seen since doing the pod.
Yeah, I'm at 7.5. I think, with that main event and then this really cool stuff that you get in this show, that six man tag was really cool. Of course the sappy Hogan video in the beginning is a must see. So and then you had like cool little quick fun stuff kind of in the middle, like with the Rikishi stuff and Billy and Chuck. Like I just thought it was a really fun show.
Yeah, like everything seemed to have a purpose. Like everything they were doing for a reason, like to set up something or something like that. It was a real smooth watch. So good stuff. All right. But that wraps up SmackDown. And so now we can go into our awards. Best match. This is a tricky one. Best match. What do you have, Jen?
Well, I gotta go with Hogan Brock.
Yeah. So I'm kind of we'll be in similar boats. I went with the six man as an actual match, but so our next one will be best moment, which was easily Brock Hogan.
Definitely.
Yeah, which is kind of crazy because I think in a lot of weeks the Shawn Triple H stuff would have probably taken it, but that Brock, I think it was just better executed. But yeah, best show at SmackDown.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yep. LVP, I have King, hands down.
Oh, God. Oh, God, yes. I almost said Triple H, but then I couldn't do that. So, King for sure.
Yeah. And it's, I know it's commentary, but man, terrible. MVP, I had Brock, because to me, that was like an elevating kind of star-making performance.
That, yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna go with Brock too.
Yeah. He elevated himself. I think it's. Yeah, I'm trying to think of who else would be in contention, but I don't know. To me,
I was
Brock.
thinking Kurt. Like, I just really
Yeah.
enjoyed Kurt.
I know. He's so good. Kurt's like my default. Like, if nobody really stood out, it's like he's a pretty easy always MVP
Kurt,
because
yeah.
he's so entertaining. Like, the, he's got beat by a 12-year-old, and he always has classic lines. He's got beat by a 12-year-old. All right, top five performers. So we could see we'll probably match up with some of these. I went Brock and Hogan, for that whole deal. I went Sean because I thought of that whole angle. It was a big angle. I thought he was stronger in it. I went Jericho and then Kurt.
Okay, so I'm going to give you... I've kind of given enough love to Hogan and Brock, so I'm going to go Kurt, Ray, because I really thought he was good. I want to kind of give some love to Raw, but I don't know. I'm going to go with Bradshaw.
Oh, that's a good one.
Because I just thought that was very interesting. Jericho. And you know what? Goldust.
Goldust. You could throw mini dust in there too. If you pick Goldust, you gotta
yeah, definitely. They come together.
For Hump and Triple H's way. Very good. Yeah, it's tough on these because when they're really cooking, like you could go with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Like this LVP was almost hard because there weren't a lot of like terrible performances on here. Like most people were. Like nobody was that offensively bad besides King and his trash commentary. But all right,
those
well,
amateur Shawn Michaels and Triple H.
Whoever the security camera.
Yeah.
The LVP, that shit ass quality. Fucking low resolution security cameras. What are you ever gonna get from that? But that wraps us up, Jen. Jen, I'm sure you have many things that you can plug. So plug away.
Well, I will talk real quick about my podcast feed's called The Jenny Position. I have a bunch of shows over there. Right now, you can listen to me and John D'Amato watch two episodes of Happy Days on You Heard About Pluto. So that was really fun. Always fun to talk to Johnny. And Geek and Sassy is over there. We should have a new episode coming up soon. And The Journey Through Infinity should have a new episode soon as well. As far as wrestling content, you and me and Tim are doing our PTB NXT thing on the PlayStation Nation Wrestling feed. I have a show called Jenny and the Gems there as well. And Talking WCW, we recently had a new episode of that where we talked about Steven Regal. So that was one of our best episodes, I felt like. And then right here on North South, you can find me on The Extreme Three-Way Dance and TNA Never Dies and Shrinkwrapped, The Psychology of Superheroes. All of that stuff you can find on my Twitter. It's at Jenny Position and the Facebook page. Give that a like as well.
Perfect. So I won't list everything we have here on North South feed. Jen mentioned a few. I will mention one new show we have here is Marcus and Tim have a new are doing Viewer's Choice, which is a little bit different than most of the stuff on the North South feed, and that they're actually looking at wrestling that's happening like now, like reacting to wrestling that's happening now, not like 20
Who
years
does
ago.
That?
Like
this. That's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Turns out people want to listen to that, I would think. But yeah, so they're doing a Viewer's Choice where they're kind of doing reaction shows to all the major like WWE events and stuff. So that's an awesome addition to the feed. But yeah, other than that, if you I'm sure you know all the mainstays, Jenny, y'all have TNA Never Dies, Extreme Three-Way Dance, all that good stuff. But if you found this podcast, I'm sure you are aware of those as well. But yeah, we made it through another episode, Jen.
Thanks for having me on, Jay. I had a blast.
Thanks for coming back. Luckily, we are not like RVD, and we always have something to say, dude. So, good for us.
So much, always.
So much to say, yeah. Never a loss for words. But thanks for listening, as always. Thanks, Jen, for coming on. And I will see you next time as we get closer and closer to SummerSlam 2002. See you later.